Hello and welcome to the special Best of the Year, the top 10 of 2016 episode of Shockwaves. I'm one of your hosts, Rob G. I'm sitting here with Mr. Elric Kane.
We made it, man.
We made it to
this
the end.
This was a tumultuous year, I gotta say. We changed shows.
We changed format a number of times.
We've added hosts. This has been a lot of stuff.
All right. People are already making faces at you, Elric, because I haven't introduced everyone else yet.
But that's how intros work. You say hi, and then you say something, and then you talk.
This is not the Elric and Rob show.
You know what? That has a nice...
Okay, that's it. Wow. Hi.
Hi, Becca.
There's Rebecca McKendry. Guys. How you doing?
Hi, how are you?
You know who else is here? Ryan Turek.
Hi,
and
how you
not,
doing?
Not only Ryan, I think you need to make this introduction.
Well, we've been wanting to have her on the show forever now.
Right.
We have...
Who?
Miss Clark Wolf.
Oh, boy. Hey, guys.
Oh, it's Clark Wolf.
What up,
guys?
Clark Wolf?
It is a killer POV bloodcast reunion.
Oh, yeah. They fought me off for 3 years, but I finally broke through.
We were waiting for your number. Actually, Elric got this wrong for years.
Things may have changed, but we're still the same.
He thought you didn't bring a 6 out of your top 10 to the 2013 episode, but after I re-listened to it, it was actually her 3. So even
you're never
you
meant
were
to go
wrong.
Back, Rob. Oh, you're not meant to go back.
So I was going to say you should tell our listeners where you could find that episode because it would be fun to kind of go back.
Yeah. Go back
well,
and listen to
all,
it.
All of the Killer POV and Bloodcast episodes are on geeknation.com.
Yep.
You can still find them on iTunes if you search either show Killer POV or Bloodcast. But yeah,
What episode number was?
You know what's weird? I gotta double check because that one was not numbered. We just called it the best of the year.
And I think because didn't we each publish it? It
went up for both shows because it was a combo show.
So you want to listen to the Bloodcast? And
we're still pushing our numbers, even though we've been done for 3 years.
Just trust the show with the Rondo kids.
No,
wow,
and that's not movie credit. Yeah.
What's funny about the missing number? Is that I actually, since Elric loves to give me a hard time about it, I went back and looked at the movies from 2013 that had come out, and I was like, nope, I don't have another one.
I thought you had a missing one.
Scribbled in is just.
I was going to bring it, and then I was like, nah, I'm all set.
But here's the thing.
American Horror Story. Hold it. Keep going with it.
I just have to say this, though, because I actually did re-listen to most of it, but what's hilarious is, so you had 9 movies you picked, right?
Yeah.
And then right towards the end, you're like, all right, this is not in my top 10, but like World War Z is like just barely
oh,
there.
Yeah.
So it's like, let's just push
put
World
it
War Z
number
to 10.
Moved everybody
and then
down
we're good.
A slide. Deal, done. We'll put World War Z at number 10.
All right.
I think now
I'm
buckle,
satisfied.
Buckle up.
Right, Elric,
I wish it wasn't
back.
World War Z. Can we talk about that a little
bit? I like me some World War Z.
You know what? I like it too.
Did you guys hear World War Z might be directed by Fincher?
Yes, I did.
That's mad.
That is never going to happen.
Yeah, I don't think so, but if it did,
that would be amazing.
I got to say, to welcome Clark, can I just welcome her? One of our longtime listeners literally wrote me this second, Jared Rivett, who co-hosts Trivia with you, and
he just wrote me as well.
He said, if Clark is there, can you please say how amazing she is in On the Line and Are You Sleeping?
That's sweet.
Which is a radio show that they do.
Yes, so Earbud Theater is a, they produce highly produced audio dramas. They are PG-13 and there's nothing too, you know, risque in there. So the whole fun for the whole family, scary fun for the whole family. But Jared wrote those two and the first one, On the Line was nominated for a bunch of awards, Jared included for his performance and his writing, which was pretty cool. And they're really cool, like radio dramas, audio dramas, and I am always flattered when he asks me to participate. So
yeah, so you do a live reading at Jump Cut once. I remember that was cool.
Oh yeah,
I love That's doing that. And we have a friend, Micah Rowland, who directed or he wrote
film.
He wrote a short film.
If you want to talk variety speak, he scribed
something.
Penned it. He wrote a short called The Drawing that I'm in that
Which
premiered on Bloody Disgusting. Thank you.
In other words, he wanted a shower scene with you and then he wrote a script around it.
Basically.
That's how these guys operate. I'll be careful. Micah is one of the worst.
I tell you what, though. I was wearing like a jumper underneath my towel and you know that I never got tired of flashing the camera there's footage like
oh Clark you rascal
it was so funny because it's like I really looked naked and then I was like no I'm dressed
but the most innocent Clark
I know ever. Right this is very PG Hollywood
this is very yeah. Emmett Otter's yeah. Jugman Christmas
yeah. Yeah. But thank you innocent. Jared that's very sweet I can't wait to see Jackals his movie
yeah
with Brad Dourif
just got Stephen Dourif
very cool
kind Stephen of amazing Dourif. Right
Stephen
Oh, yeah, Steven. Thank you. Oh, One of the Dorfs.
Whatever.
The good Dorf. One. Yeah,
the handsome one that smokes e-cigarettes.
All right, so we have a lot to tackle this episode.
Right?
A lot.
We're counting them down.
I think we should just kind of begin with our criteria of how we went about our selections, because we're going to go through our top 10, and then we're going to kind of rattle off some other kudos.
We're going to do the kudos, I think. We're just
do you want to?
Yeah, just, I mean, we're going to talk about, like, disc and all that stuff, just to get in the flow.
Really?
Yeah.
We had, like, a 45-email chain going
to hammer all this stuff out.
Because 5 seconds before we started, this is not what we discussed. Because
I thought we did.
Because we want
to... Get back to cramming there, man.
Just keep drinking.
No, because we want to save that stuff for the end, because I think there's going to be overlap. We want to reveal the top 10 first, and then we can go, oh, yeah, this thing from that.
All right. I think Elric meant...
I meant tape,
like,
Blu-rays,
performance stuff. I still think that should be at the end. I think we should get right into the thick of the movies and then do all that stuff as follow-up.
I think that would have built a nice conversation.
We're already there,
man. Yeah, Elric, what they're saying is, Elric, be quiet.
My show is going to be different. Listen,
it's going to be called 2017 Elric's Horror Show.
It's coming.
We're talking to a man who did a full episode about The Pit.
Elric's Horror Podcast.
Which one is that? Yeah,
it's coming out soon, I think.
Oh, God. All right.
Rob, how did you go about your selections?
Well, I thought it's only fair to pick movies that came out within January 2016 to December 2016, within the year, festival movies and stuff like that. We could talk about that after, but I don't ever think that's fair because people listening to this, I want them to be able to see our top 10 picks, you know, somehow.
Exactly,
That's number one. And then in terms of criteria, I mean, look, we're not saying these are like the best movies of the years, but, you know, because we were discussing this a little bit before as we've all been kind of going back and forth on what we're going to pick. You know, I like it to be somewhat diverse. Mm-hmm. So yeah, there is going to be the artsy independent movie, but then I like studio stuff too. For me, it's about the experience. Mm-hmm. Some of them made me think a lot. Some of them I just had fun with. So these are the 10 movies that I appreciated the most this year, and that's kind of how I went about it.
Clark,
so.
What about you?
Yeah, similar. I mean, I think for me, I'm never about. I don't want to ever talk about what the best is because I feel like best and favorite are not the same. Sometimes they're the same, but for me, sometimes they're not. And so my top 10 are definitely my favorites. Mm-hmm. And some of them are broad definition of genre. That was another thing that we were all talking about. Like, you know, what is defined as thriller versus straight horror versus super tense, but not really horror, but it played a fantastic fest. So and that, which is my criteria, by the way.
Played it fantastic.
Did it play it fantastic? It's in. It's allowed. But yeah, I was saying before we started rolling, and I wanted to point this out, that over half of my picks were directed by non-Americans, which I found very interesting. And I have very few studio movies on my list, which I was also surprised by. But that was certainly not a criteria. Like, you know, it just shook out that way. And I can't wait to hear what you guys have, because I think one of the things we've all noticed is that 2016 was a great year for studio horror. Mm. Like, there's a lot of really solid stuff that came out, which I'm sure we'll get into. So yeah, it's interesting that for me, who's usually such a Hollywood mainstream kid, that that I didn't really go with that many of them.
Now, I'm the opposite this year, where I have always filled my top 10 list with mostly indie films and maybe one studio pick will creep in if it's something big like Conjuring. This year, I did mostly studio picks with a couple of indie films in there.
Nice.
That is intriguing.
Elric,
I found
you?
This one. I mean, I'm like Clark. I went with my gut of my taste and what I love, but it is really hard because there were three or four studio films that I thought were really good, but because it's just not the thing I think about after I watch it. I love those movies. I see them, but I never think about them again. And so then I think about these weird little movies I catch, and I do want to represent them because I think other people who make lists out there might not represent some right. of these movies. So I feel like be true to that. But I cannot remember a year. I was thinking about this. I have about four that aren't going to be on my 10 that I think would almost be top five material in other years. That's how good to me this year was. Mm. It was like overflowing. I mean, there's movies that I'm just like, I can't believe that's not on my 10.
Yeah, I have a mentions list that is just as like movies I want to mention at the end of the night is just as long as my top 10.
There's good movies this year.
Yeah. I mean, like I kind of did what you guys did as well. For me, you know, even when it comes to like big award season stuff, from the Oscars to the Golden Globes to all these top 10 lists, at the end of the day, it's really about what kind of film are you going to revisit 10 years down the road? Yeah. You know, there's a lot of films that looking back and previous years of top 10 lists, you know, there's a lot of films I'm like, I don't own that. And I, you know what, my opinion of that has changed, and I never would have, I probably wouldn't have revisited it then or now. So a lot of my selections, again, films that you can, that came out in 2016, not films that just hit the festival circuit, but are readily available now on VOD or in the theater. And then it's a bottom line is just my favorites, you know?
Yeah.
What really quality. And I try to, each year I try to stick to, when I do the horror list, really what is horror? You know, what is a horror film? You know, there's a couple of films that I saw on the festival circuit that are certainly genre bending or on the bubble. I kind of left those out, and I'll mention those in the special mentions. But these are kind of like horror films, scary films, thrillers that I really, really enjoyed that are that I will revisit or I will own and that I respect for many reasons.
Was it hard to pick 10 Blum films?
Oh, well, thank you. Thank you, Elric, for bringing that up, because like I did last year, I do have to say that I did not put any Blumhouse films in here.
So
it's purely non-Blum related films.
Yeah.
Take that.
Take that, infomercial guy.
Yeah.
you know what's funny? I just want to make an observation before we get started. It's looking back, I've been doing top 10 lists since I've been writing on the web, as I'm sure everybody in the room has.
You've been doing it since I was in the fetus, Rob.
Yeah. When,
I know, pretty much as soon as you started watching horror.
That's Alien was 10. Great.
But what's funny to me is like when I look back on those lists now, you know, the 2 through 10 are always kind of like, all right. But number one is always the, like what you said, number one should be the one that you want to revisit. Like, there's no question when you say, well, my number one from 2012, and you're like, yeah, I'd watch that again right now.
Mm-hmm.
I kind of feel like that's what should be your number one movie, is the one that you have no problem revisiting whenever.
Yep. I had a really hard time picking and organizing. As you all know, I hate lists. I do not like making these lists.
But there's 10 this time.
There
yes.
are 10.
Okay, great.
Oh, I did it. I knew.
She brought it back.
Elric would have never let you live it down.
No, I brought 11 this year. No, just
yes.
But no, it's funny that you say that, because I had a really hard time picking number one, because there are so many. I feel like the things on my list are so different that it's really hard. Like, there are some things that I thought was the scariest movie of the year, but then there are some things that I was like, that was the most fun.
Yeah.
And this is like, you know, and so it's so hard.
We're going to have a good conversation down the line.
Yeah.
Because I was like, I was swapping out my number one and number two, because a year ago, this film would have made my number one. But then I saw something along the way that I felt was a bigger qualifier, you know?
Interesting.
Yeah. I'm intrigued, yeah.
I think what ultimately, and I won't say what it is, but yet, it'll keep you in suspense. But what ultimately decided my number one was I ended up seeing it 3 times in the theater for various reasons. And every time I was like, I love this. And so
I kind of feel that way about my top four.
That's yeah.
All four of them I'd watch again. Yeah. But after that, it's just good films.
Yeah.
So, which is cool. We've got good stuff.
Okay, guys, let's do it.
Yeah, that was a lot of throat clearing. Let's dig in.
I'll start at 10, and then we'll go around the table.
Number 10.
And this will immediately get the conversation going, because Ryan and I have already talked about it off record. My number 10 is going to be Lights Out.
Yep.
And, you know, here's the thing. I know I had a lot of fun with this movie. I went to see it opening night with a bunch of friends. And, you know, obviously the short is fantastic. It's like one of those great YouTube horror shorts that's just so effective. And you wonder, how are they going to expand that into a feature film? And I went with a bunch of people. Audience loved it. It definitely feels like it's you know, the flaws of it are it feels like it's missing a third act, which in fact it actually is. They did cut out the last 10 minutes of the movie. but, and you know, because it's super short, but it's tight, and I really like the characters. They did things that were unexpected. And what solidified it for me was I rewatched it like a week or two ago with my roommate who had not seen it. And he got really high, and I hit all the lights out and cranked the sound. And I mean, he was jumping every 5 seconds, and I was like loving the hell out of it. And I remember one of the biggest critiques when it came out was, I guess, the way they tried to fill in the backstory. Everyone's like, oh, I don't want them to explain this and this and that. But I saw no difference on my second viewing than to explaining the backstory of Freddy Krueger. Mm-hmm. Like that one scene in the basement when like, well, we burned him alive and this and that.
Or Samara in the ring.
Yeah. Exactly. You know, so what stood out to me about Lights Out is even though, and again, you know, I thought David Sandberg did a great job adapting it and directing it.
Oh, yeah.
I mean, you know, it was funny, we walked out of the theater because there's one scene where they go to fluorescence, I think, or, you know,
Blacklight in the basement.
Oh, whatever. Yeah. And my friend Blake Regal was with us, and he's like, oh, man, didn't you love when they took out the blacklight? I was like, oh, look, I found a blacklight, and it's going to look amazing cinematically for the next 5 minutes. Because that's what that's set up.
Yeah.
But no, I thought it was really strongly directed and fun. And quite frankly, it's like it may not be the best horror movie, but I feel like that's – we're going to be talking about that character in a couple of years, like whether there's sequels or not. And I imagine there's going to be sequels. Mm-hmm. So, yeah, that's why it's squeaked just in because of entertainment value.
Yeah, I agree. That also sits at my number 10 spot. And I had a struggle with it because there's the part of me that's like, oh, this is such a mainstream kind of go for the throat, endless, you know, jump scare-a-thon, you know, and at the end of the day, I just enjoyed it.
Yeah,
you know, the first time I saw it with a festival, and the festival audience went nuts. And then I took...
Oh, yeah, I was at that screening.
Yeah, you were at the screening. And then I took my girlfriend and her daughter to go see it at, like, the Burbank 16.
Yeah.
And it was a riot. Everybody was jumping. They were jumping. And it just... It was infectious. I thought David Sandberg did a really good job with it. You know, it's kind of like one of those just relentless... scare fest. It's a roller coaster ride, you know? And I thought Teresa Palmer was really good.
I agree, actually. Yeah. May I interject? She's one of my best performances.
Okay, yeah. Oh, nice. No, I thought she was really good.
Mean Becca in the movie?
Yeah, Rob kept saying.
Who may be based on somebody in this room?
Yeah, yeah. There were some similarities, including that she constantly wore this necklace that I wear all the time that we were kind of like, that's weird.
But it's just a fun movie, you know, and it's one that I'll revisit every once in a while and just put on for the Halloween season. And that's sometimes you just need that kind of stuff. And even though it's PG-13, it's like, screw that.
See, I don't even know that. And I respect, by the way, I respect the filmmakers because if you have the Blu-ray, which I picked up for Black Friday, whatever, that last 10-minute scene is on there.
Oh, yeah.
And it's not that it's bad, but you literally watch and you're like, no, the movie ended where it ended. Yeah. Like, there's no need for it to go on any more than it did. So, yeah.
Well, Lights Out is also my number 10.
Whoa. Whoa.
I know, right, guys? What happened?
I'm going to be the naysayer on this one.
All right. Well, what's your 10 now?
Yeah, what's your 10?
Well, no, first I'll just say on that film, the thing I don't like about the movie, I like the movie, but I never more than liked it. I think it had some really fun gags.
Mm-hmm.
But my problem with it just... It's not often that I watch a film and I feel like I sometimes see behind the curtains at the script while you're watching a movie. And I kept thinking, man, this feels so rushed to the screen. Like it feels like it had 3 months from, hey, let's do this from the short to put this on the screen.
I never asked this.
But there's plot things behind it that like it does exactly what I hate about horror, which is when you explain away the thing and tell me exactly what its origin story was in the first – in the first half of the film.
No, it's actually the midway point.
It's right at the midway point. Yeah, okay. And it's just I didn't need that. But I actually do think one thing that I walked away is I think that director is going to make a great movie. I think he's really talented. I think the idea is good. I like the monster. So it's nitpicky just, you know, it'd be a top 20 kind of movie for me. But you know.
I had all those problems too, you know.
Right.
But at the end of the day, it's just like the execution outweighed the story.
This is the only time I will ever ask Elric this. Yeah. Did you see it in a theater?
Yeah.
Okay.
I saw it first day it opened.
That's definitely why it made my number 10 is I went to see it. I saw it in Montreal because we were at Fantasia and I went to see it on opening night at midnight. And
I didn't see it on French Canada.
Oh, yeah. That might have made
the
difference.
That makes a difference.
Yeah, actually, I saw Ghostbusters while we were there too and they had French subtitles on it. It was pretty crazy.
It won't help that movie either.
It didn't mind that one as much,
but it's
that's
cool.
For another discussion.
I'm glad Lights Out made the list, because it is a fun movie. That's cool. My number 10 was Change Just a Second. I just crossed out the thing, which is so great. I had a little...
Mind you, I'm going to paint a portrait here of Elric before the show.
I'm just freaking
sitting in the corner like a kid who didn't do his homework.
I like to think of it as Joaquin Phoenix and the Master. Sitting in the corner looking at a wall, just being crazy.
I just fell asleep.
Yeah, she just fell asleep for that.
Come on, we got to get to Clark's 10. What is it?
Oh, no. I meant Joaquin Phoenix and the Master.
I had a little indie film. I just crossed it out and I just wrote Don't Breathe. I could not leave it off. Like, I think it's the best. It's the top three directed films of the year, but the direction and the way it's put together is better than the actual story itself and some of the performance stuff at the start. But I just love being the hands of Fetty as a filmmaker, because I felt the same with Evil Dead. It is literally a roller coaster ride. And I don't think that about most of the movies I watch people throw that label. It's a roller coaster. He is literally that filmmaker, the guy who literally just takes you, grabs you, and goes, I'm just going to throw you around for a while. Mm-hmm. And sometimes I don't like that manipulation, but in this case, I had so much fun watching it. And it was off my list till 5 seconds ago, and I'm just like, fuck it, this film deserves to be here. So,
and you know what's funny is that one just missed out, and much like Lights Out, I rewatched it.
Yeah.
Just because I was like, man, I had a lot of fun seeing that movie, and it was cool. But the thing is, it's just like, it doesn't 100% add, like...
What if you watch it next Thanksgiving?
Maybe.
I'm thinking a double feature with Blood Rage. Blood Rage, it's cranberry sauce, and this would be, it's not for the turkey,
well,
and we got the double.
There's just a lot of it I couldn't... Like, I love it as it's like a, for lack of a better term, and I love Fetty and I love what he did with the movie, but it's kind of a flimsy that's all stylistically executed.
Yeah, totally.
And when I revisited it, I was like, no, that's the difference between that and Lights Out.
Mm-hmm.
You know what I mean? So I couldn't... Yeah. I like the movie a lot, but it didn't make
money. And also, it made a lot of money, which is cool.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Which is nice to see a film like
especially
this.
Especially for an R-rated movie that kind of came out of nowhere on an original, you know, meaning not pre-established... premise.
Yeah. Yeah. And if you haven't seen it, you should see it, because it isn't just what the trailer gave, which was my big apprehension with it. There are other twists to come.
Oh, sure.
And that's a lot of fun.
All right
Clark.
Well, I just want to say real fast on Lights Out, because surprisingly for me, it did not make my top 10.
Okay.
I liked the movie a lot. I did. And I saw it with Ryan at the festival as well. And the audience was just so into it. And I think it was like a real growing up moment for me, because I think I see too many horror movies, you know, like to the point where I like had that first realization. And I think it happens for people at different times. Mm-hmm. But I was like, this should be right up my alley. If you listen to the Bloodcast, you know, ghosts, check. Mom stories, check. Like all, like, you know, wonky young girl who like just has to take care of everybody and whatever, check. Like this just checked all my boxes. And yet I wasn't moved by it at all. Now, it doesn't mean I didn't like it and have a great time with it and recommend it and give it a good score, but it just didn't, it didn't like rattle me the way I thought it would. However, I do want to say the fact that a studio put out a summer movie dealing with depression and like mental health and all of these, I mean, I was really impressed that the studio went there like they did.
You saying you're not moved, I think it's the same reason it's not in my top 10, and it's impossible to talk about without spoilers, so I'm just not going to even really go there, but it's the way they kind of end their story.
Yeah.
When you're talking about depression, for me, felt like a major cop-out. Such a cop-out that I couldn't even handle. I was like, oh, man.
There's
so many other ways you could have given us something here.
Yeah.
Emotionally resonant.
But, I agree.
That's film making.
So, with all that being said, my number 10, which I can almost guarantee is not on any of your lists, is Blair Witch. I really liked Blair Witch.
You are correct, my dear.
That's definitely not on my list.
Yep, I figured it wouldn't be. But here's, so I just want to set up for you guys and for the audience. I knew I was doing a panel at Comic-Con with Adam and Simon and the producers of the Blair Witch Project, the original. But I walked into my screening thinking, okay, it's like an indie horror panel or something, and that's why they're doing it.
So you didn't know.
I didn't know.
Oh, okay.
Because it's called The
Witch. And I saw it, and I saw it a month before Comic-Con. So I saw it early, and I have to tell you, the screening that I was at, which was small, admittedly, maybe 20 people were in it, and it was at Lionsgate, everybody walked out of that room like, this is going to crush.
Mm.
Like, the energy in our screening was just like, everybody was freaked out. I saw it with Rachel Hine, who's the editor-in-chief of Nerdist. She was crouched in her chair. It was working for her.
Wait, can I ask you, when the title came up, did it say the Woods or Blair Witch at that point? The actual title, like when you're watching the movie.
There was no. Oh,
I don't think there is a title.
Wow. Oh,
okay.
Does it say
Blair
Witch? No, there's in the first like 2 minutes, there's a sign that says Burkittsville, Maryland. And I was like, huh, that's a fun little nod. And then it becomes, if you've seen the movie in the first 5 minutes, it becomes very clear that it is a Blair Witch movie. But so my experience with it was just completely clean.
Yeah.
And I had a lot of fun with it. And I have to tell you, again, unpopular opinions and that's fine. I loved the last 20 minutes. I liked that we saw stuff because I rewatched The Blair Witch Project for a project that Nerdist did, actually, where we revisited classic horror films, and that was one of them. And I, you know, I liked a lot of the atmosphere of the first Blair Witch, but I still feel like I needed to see a little more.
Yeah.
And the mystery didn't work for me. So all the weird shit in the cabin, and I won't like spoil exactly what it is, but I loved it. So
why do you think, and for everyone, why do you think this didn't land? I find it very hard to describe exactly why it doesn't land.
So
it's a hard,
especially with that early, those early screenings, like at Comic-Con, the reaction was so positive.
Yeah. So expectations obviously
like
play something.
It's going to be a slam dunk.
I think that is it, if I may. I think the fact that they had this huge reveal at Comic-Con, and then the movie doesn't come out for 2 months. What? Like, that was such a bonehead move. You have all the momentum. Like, go for it. And also, I think calling it The Woods and keeping it The Woods and then letting people figure out, holy shit, this is in the Blair Witch universe?
Right.
Like, what? But also, if you don't know The Blair Witch Project, which I saw it when it came out on home video and that was it, I didn't need it. I knew it enough from pop culture to where this movie just entertained me and filled in enough of the blanks. So I think that's what it was. It was too much time in between this weird reveal and then expectations get warped. And then
I bet kids like who hadn't seen the original and just watched this would probably have thought it was pretty cool.
They probably thought it was great.
Well, you know, me and Ryan saw it with
Jackie. Yeah.
Which, and she and how old is she? 12.
Yeah.
And she loved it, right?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
She thought it was great.
I think that a lot of it was also that it had been billed so much as the best horror film of the year. This is a game changer.
Yeah,
some
of the quotes were a little much.
And some of the quotes were kind of over the top, so that I was going in.
It was one about, like, it's going to destroy you or something.
Redefine the genre. Yeah, so when I'm reading these things and then I finally watched it, I was just like, oh.
Yeah, that's not.
That didn't do any of those things.
That didn't crush you, Becca.
I was expecting to be crushed, and I wasn't.
But Clark, why wasn't the drone payoff? Come on, that drone. I want a payoff for that damn drone. I can't shake it, man.
I'll get back to you on that and my number three.
All right, that's right. Wait till we get to number three. I have a surprise for you.
Okay.
Number three.
All right, so we're up to number nine. My number nine is The Autopsy of Jane Doe.
Woohoo, that's on my list too, but not at number nine.
Yeah, this one, I mean, look, I liked it a lot, and the surprises of it was really good. And more than anything, when you take actors like Brian Cox and Emile Hirsch and put them to, I mean, they're so good. I had never thought, you know, I don't know why I never thought of it, but like, you know, obviously I've, as a horror fan and somebody that's interested in true crime and stuff, I've thought it somewhat about the, you know, criminology. But I found like the first half just so compelling.
Me
like,
too.
There was something the way it wasn't even like
you
shot
hadn't seen the trailer, right?
In a way that's like, oh no, I saw nothing about it.
Because I saw the trailer just now before I went to a screening before I got here, and I was so bummed when I saw it. I was just thinking, man, all that joy I had of not seeing, knowing, it is everything, man. Everything.
No. We talked about that on Nightmares last week. It was a whole discussion debate segment
about
that
trailer.
Yeah, it's a shame because it's a film that reveals its little secrets as it goes. And as a crowd, I felt the energy of the crowd like pulsating with each change.
Yeah,
I'll talk about it later because I think it's fantastic.
I'm sure a lot of other people picked it on my list. But I put it at number nine because
there's
just so much good stuff this year, and I really did like it a lot.
Yeah.
And I think it's not a spoiler to say, no, I wouldn't say there's a twist, but it definitely takes a left turn
that's
unexpected.
Yeah, it goes a couple of different places,
It goes into very original territory.
Yeah.
And you're like, no, you don't expect the twist at all. Which was what I commend about.
It didn't make my list,
but I commend it for keeping. It didn't leave any clues.
Yeah.
Right.
Like you knew that there was something unsettling and something that was going to be revealed, but you didn't know exactly what it was. Like, I couldn't have figured it out. And then when they were like, oh yeah, it's this, I'm like, oh, that's really cool.
Yeah.
But it just took that first
and
that
it has a bit of a tale, like the best Tales from the Crypt episode
that's
ever.
Exactly. Yeah. Yes.
If I said that, I'd be like, yes, yeah. This is the
it's a nice little chamber piece scary movie that's in the vein of Tales from the Crypt.
Yep. Yeah, it's really good.
Okay, who Elric. Elric,
all right, this is the weirdest one on my list. It's a little film called Evolution by Lucille Hedlisvolk. I'm not even going to try to say it. It's Gaspard Noé's girlfriend, or maybe wife now, or maybe they've split up, but she edited his first couple films. Her first film is about 10 – I've been waiting for this follow-up for about 8 years or 7 years. Her first film is a film called Innocence. I think it's one of the best films ever made. Oh. It's like Suspiria, but without some of the payoff, and it looks like it. It's gorgeous.
But
same DP.
Scary.
No.
That's the thing.
No, it's not scary. What, Innocence?
No. I'm talking about
Evolution.
Evolution isn't scary. But it's dread. From start to end, it's nonstop dread. It's very slow. Yeah. But it's like unclassifiable cinema. When people make a movie that will stand 100 years from now, somebody could watch that and go, what the hell? It's just cinema art. It's this weird thing. It's set on a weird island that's never explained. There's these young boys and their moms. It looks like Greece or somewhere. Yeah. And you're watching it going, oh, this is Greece. And then slowly you realize, where are all the men? You don't see men. And you slowly get into this thing where weird operations are happening to the boys. You don't know what for. I'm not going to say because that's kind of a little twist. But you don't. This is not for all the listeners. This is for the people who go in for the Elric weird possession pick. This is that kind of movie. It is literally visionary cinema, and it's slow. I saw it about a year and a half ago or 2 years ago at AFI Fest, but it's on VOD right now in the main section of VOD, and it played at Cine Family for a while. And I just think it would be higher up the list, I think, if it had more of a pulse to it, like if it went bigger, but just as an art piece, it kind of knocks my socks off.
It's definitely abstract.
Yeah, and there aren't a lot of directors out there making that kind of work, and it's just out there. When we talk about surrealism, to how do you, like, we always talk about how hard it is to get money to make any little movie, but then you watch a movie like that probably actually had a decent budget to create its aesthetic, and you're like, how did you create that world, you know? So anyway, I wanted to definitely mention her, because I think for those people into that weird stuff, that film is for you.
Mm-hmm.
Wow.
Okay. Becky, you're number 9.
I don't know if this would have made anybody else's list, but for my number 9, based purely on how fun the screening was, Sadako versus Kyoko.
Oh.
Yeah.
Is that out?
Yeah.
It's
on Shudder.
It was on Shudder.
I don't think it is it still?
Yeah.
I haven't watched it yet, but I would consider that a 2016 release. No.
Yeah, I'm pretty sure that it did.
It's awesome.
A wider release. But
we'll give it to you.
Thank you.
I'm dying to see it.
Yeah, it's so much fun. And some of the people left like, oh, this was such crap. And I think it's because it didn't take itself overly seriously. Like, you're combining these two incredibly scary franchises together. And it had great scares, but it definitely realized what it was and realized that, you know, it's kind of funny that these two people are meeting and the setup to get them to meet has to be kind of, you know.
Like Freddy versus Jason?
Yeah. Exactly. So it didn't take itself seriously, but at the same time, it had some really good scares, and getting to it, it was just fun.
It's a journey. They cleverly were able to put these two characters together in the world, a plausible way.
Yeah.
And I think that was it.
It's clever.
Really well done.
Yeah, it's really clever. And then what happens at the end? It's just like, oh, that's where it had to go. So it's just awesome. Crazy. So, yeah.
And can we say just probably the best marketing campaign I've seen for a film in like years?
Because
we were putting up they would do videos all the time. There were public service announcements of them. Kayako and her little boy had an Instagram account. I mean, anytime they threw the first pitch at some Japanese baseball game, anytime we posted something about that on the website, everyone went nuts. And so, it was really cool stuff. Ryan, you're number 9.
My number 9 is The Shallows. Jonah Coletzera's shark movie, shark exploitation movie. I think it is really well done.
Especially that ending, right?
Clark could barely contain herself.
I want to hear about this. I saw this. I think that movie defied the odds. I saw that first teaser and I was like, that's a big fucking shark. I'm down. And then I kind of went in to the movie with a chip on my shoulder because I was like, this cannot live up to anything. And then I was like, oh no, it totally surpassed my expectations. This movie, if you look at it from a pure craftsmanship level, Jaume really did a great job of setting the tone of you know, a sense of survival, a sense of danger. The whole bit with like the waves coming up and you see the guys and then the waves come back down and the waves come back up and they're no longer there. I mean, like,
and there was an emotional reason for her being there, which is actually pretty cool.
And no, that's
even
I was going to get
rushed,
to that. Yeah,
it's actually pretty good.
Yeah, it look in a movie like that, you can't dwell on it too much. Yeah. It's you got to get in and out and like establish that kind of emotional initial state that she's in, and then like, oh, you want to see her survive through this.
And you had a star, and she was really fun to watch.
She was fantastic. She totally held her own in that movie. And
there's that one shot that Elric liked her ass. I did.
She carried it, you know? not her ass, not Elric, but she carried the film.
But there's a really surreal scene in it that's actually like
one jellyfish.
Of
those. Yeah,
it's literally one of the most gorgeous things on a screen this year. Yes. It's this crazy jellyfish scene. But I got to say, the only reason it wouldn't be on my, because I did enjoy 90% of the movie, I thought the ending was so fucking stupid. Like some people said they loved it. I thought it was so ridiculous that it colored the whole movie for me.
Have any of you all seen The Little Mermaid recently? Because
I watch it every weekend because of my daughter.
I know where you're going with this.
The shark in the Shallows turns into the shark in The Little Mermaid.
Wow,
like a cartoon accordion at one point. I mean,
I fucking loved it. It was so fun. I thought, I mean, like, White Collar Sarah, I mean, this filmmaker gave us House of Wax.
Yeah.
He gave us Orphan.
Surprises.
He gave us, you know, he gave us all these movies that don't have any right to be as good as they are.
Yep.
And yet here we are.
No,
with
that's
a great
true.
With a great shark movie that made my skin crawl. I was like, oh, get the fuck out of the water. Like, it was really, really solid.
Yeah.
And you're not throwing anything to the seagull, huh?
Steven Seagal.
He was good.
Yeah, it might come down to that seagull or the goat in Witch. Right.
So now, wait, before we move on, was that not on anyone else's, The Shallows?
It is on mine.
Okay, cool. So
but we'll because you guys later. Know my love of shark movies, it's a little higher.
Well, Clark, before your number 9, is there any more that you want to say about The Shallows? Because your facial expression, it felt like you have a lot to say.
Yeah, Clark. What do you got to say? What do you got to say about my love for the shark movie?
I have a lot to say about The Shallows, but what I'll say is this. I love Deeply Sea.
Oh, no, that's not how you begin.
Hold on.
Deeply Sea has the parrot as opposed to the seagull.
Deep Blue Sea.
This is now an invalid conversation.
No. Hold on, I'm kidding. And it's my number 3 pick of this year. No, I love Deep Blue Sea. Deep Blue Sea knows exactly what it is. The Shallows, I could not with this movie because it either needs to be Jaws or 127 Hours or Deep Blue Sea. You cannot do both.
It found it in between.
That shark.
It took Jaws to find that fine balance between the two. Stop. And in between you have The Shallows.
That shark.
I want to subscribe to the podcast again. Getting into this.
The sharks at Deep Blue Sea look like the Starburst commercials.
What I'm saying is they that shark was insane. That shark was thinking. That shark was like, I got to eat this
absolutely.
Bitch. I will not stop at nothing until I can eat this bitch off of a rock.
She's treading on my whale territory.
No, this
Joe's
is
the anti-Alzheimer shark.
Oh my God. And he's out for Blake Friday because he needs her to be a doctor. And so the Alzheimer shark, she really is Saffron Burroughs. Basically what I'm saying is this is a prequel to Deep Blue Sea.
Somewhere between Little Mermaid and Deep Blue Sea. All right.
I can't believe
you sold it to me.
So this shark is soon to be captured by Samuel Jackson. And
then you know the rest from there. Okay. Right. No, I think too, in all seriousness, The Shallows was a blacklist script. I certainly had really high expectations that this was going to be maybe, I want to see a woman in a survival movie. You know, I wanted this to be a female-led 127 Hours. Mm-hmm. I wanted it to be a woman versus nature, a woman versus the wild. And it just, it was a little too goofy for me. And I was disappointed in that because I felt like it had been sold to me as something else. Now, if I had gone in and known that it was going to be a little goofball and fun, like then I probably would have had a different expectation. But
that's fair.
Yeah. I think that
that's exactly what I thought about Deep Blue Sea. I went in thinking. This experimentation on sharks for Alzheimer's was going to be a serious deal.
Awesome.
But I do love Orphan and House of Wax. So
all right. Well,
mine will be really fast because I know it's not on any of your lists because this is my this is my weirdest one. But I have to say, and I'm being serious, the reason I put it on here is because it scared me more than any other movie this year.
Oh.
And that was The Wave, which is a Norwegian film.
I love The Wave.
And it came out in Norway in 2015. 15, but it came out here in the States in 2016, so it's on my list. And that movie scared the shit out of me.
Yeah.
And I don't know if it's because we live in Southern California, it's a little too real. I don't know, but it just, that movie worked for me. Mm-hmm. And it scared me, and I felt every moment of it. I thought the acting was great. And I thought, you know, I thought it was a real, true.
Well, what it did so well is hit all those familiar buttons in a really, really solid way.
Yeah.
You know, you knew so-and-so was going to have to survive this incident and then go rescue somebody.
Yeah.
You
mm-hmm.
knew that that person who was going to rescue, there's going to be a ticking clock,
yeah.
you know? How are they going to get out of that?
Yeah.
And what the filmmaker was able to do is just turn things on their head a little bit.
Yeah.
And he did it really well.
Yeah, I dug it.
I've never heard anything bad about it. I got to see it.
It's on
Netflix,
right? It is.
Yeah.
If you're in the U.S., I know for sure, because sometimes when we're on Nightmares, we recommend movies. We're like, it's streaming on Netflix. And then people internationally go, no, it's not. But it is definitely streaming on Netflix in the U.S. So The Wave is my number. No, it's not.
All righty. Number 8 for me is The Invitation.
Mm.
Nice.
Plain and simple. I mean, it's just, a lot of people talked about it, and it was a lot earlier in the year, but I respect Karin Kusuma a lot. She was on Killer POV, one of the last guests we had, and it's just one of those movies that it's the dread that it induces is so palpable, and you can't really put your finger on it. You're not sure where it's going. I've only seen it the one time, and I'm looking forward to seeing it a second time because I hear it plays even better, knowing kind of the direction it goes in.
Mm-hmm.
But I just thought it was one of the most tense experiences I've had all year. I thought the acting was great. And
I love that feeling.
The final shot is fantastic. The ending is fantastic.
I love the feeling when you're at a dinner party that's already kind of a little weird, and then Zodiac shows up, and you're like, oh, shit.
Oh, yeah. That's
like, I'm watching that movie go, oh,
that
shit.
That was amazing.
Yeah, I
didn't
trust that dude.
Don't let him in. That's a little higher up on my list, so I'll get to it. But I agree with you. I think it was a very interesting film, and I love that it took its time. And the ending is, it's probably one of the best endings of the year.
Yeah.
Really
we'll
solid.
We'll get to it later.
Elric, what's your number 8?
Number 8 is a little Mike Flanagan action with Hush.
Yes.
Ooh.
And I got to say, Mike Flanagan's other movie, which is a Bloom one, right? Ouija 2 was awfully close too. And I just decided I'm going one Flanagan, and Hush for me was just because it's an original film. But both of them were really entertaining. He's on top form. This guy is rolling. I just heard he had another announcement with you guys today. It's awesome to see because he's nice and he knows what he's doing. And I love that. Obviously, none of us have probably seen Before I Wake, which is a bummer. But
he posted a link to the to Canadian Amazon because it's coming out there in January. And he's like, here, buy it there. Because it's region free.
Yeah.
So I'm going to actually pick
But I kept Hush like further down only because for me it is still like almost like an experiment in the sense that like I'm going to have this bare bones idea, but I'm going to execute it so well and make you really invested in her. And I really appreciated that. And I just thought it did feel like a trial run for something awesome. Like he's going to – like I watch that movie and go, yeah, this is going to be the film that lands you something fantastic.
Yeah.
Which is enough sometimes, you know, for a slasher film.
I'm so excited for Gerald's Game.
That's the one I'm most curious how he'll pull that off.
Yeah, I'm really intrigued to see what he does with that because it's one of those ones that I was like, you could never turn
like
that into a screen.
Unadaptable.
Yeah.
But, yeah.
So I'm intrigued.
Becca, you're number 8.
The Shallows.
Oh.
Yeah. I just fucking love shark movies.
You do.
No, I mean, the shark, for me, this movie felt like, it could go sci-fi level, but instead it kind of went awesome. And
wait, when was it going to go science fiction?
No, sci-fi is in the channel.
S-Y-F-Y.
Level of shark movie.
Shark.
Like, you could have made this on that grade.
But not with Blake Lively.
With Blake Lively. But yeah, instead they were like, let's put some money into it and make it huge. And for me, it just totally worked. And yeah, there were moments with the shark where I was like, that shark does not look that real. But it didn't fucking matter because I love shark movies.
The whale stuff was the best stuff.
The whale stuff?
Yeah.
That was actually kind of scary, like a carcass of a whale.
You know what? I'm just going to drop this. Okay, in Jaws, the shark did not look real, but because of the filmmaking, you were able to accept it. With this film, it was the exact same way for me. It was like, okay, yeah, that shark looks awfully CGI.
At the end, they showed too much of him.
Yeah, they showed way too much at the end.
I was so invested in the movie itself. Whatever.
And
I don't
care record, I wasn't saying it was goofy because I thought the shark looked goofy. I thought his behavior was goofy.
Yeah.
No, I had a blast with it. It was definitely one of my top screenings
of
the year.
And just to clarify, I wasn't comparing The Shallows to Jaws.
Yeah, you were, Ryan. You just said that The Shallows is better than Jaws.
God damn it, Clark.
Just to be clear, where do you rank it in the Jaws franchise? If you're ranking it between Jaws movies, where does it fall?
Great question. After four.
Wait a minute, what?
Wait.
I mean, Revenge is great.
Is four like two
for
you?
Oh, you're a fucking idiot.
I love Revenge, right?
I like Revenge. You're talking about like if I'm going to place The Shallows in the Jaws legacy?
Where do you place it?
One, two, Shallows, three, four.
Boom.
Wow.
Oh, I agree with three being further down. Before, I'd put up number three.
You're out of your fucking mind. You have no idea.
Voodoo. What? Voodoo shark. Come on. What is the name of that ceremony? I think that was a trivia question.
Have you read the novelization, Ryan? You're missing out.
Yeah, come on, Ryan. You haven't even read the novelization.
I keep wanting to find one of those barrels so I can turn it into a planter like they have. I'm like... Like, no one would get that. But if my mailman was ever like, oh, Jaws 4, I'd be like, oh, you are awesome.
and the best story, of course, that you guys probably already know, but that's the movie that Michael Caine was shooting that's cost him not getting his Oscar on stage because he was on set of The Revenge. I'm like, that's so cool.
Ryan,
this list is heating up. Clark is fanning herself.
Oh, I'm sorry. I wore a sweater because it's my first time.
We turn the air.
I need in here because we have to turn the AC off.
Don't mind me. I'm just fanning myself.
My number eight is... and this list is going to start getting serious, guys. Oh. The list is The Eyes of My Mother.
Me too.
Number eight is The Eyes of My Mother. Boom.
Wait, both your number eight?
Yep. Yeah. Bloodcast.
Oh, wow.
Yeah, Nick.
Bloodcast with an eight.
Nick Pesci's directorial debut proves that this is definitely someone who is going to throw you off kilter with the rest of his career, I feel. Like, he's got the chops to deliver some really heavy stuff. He's got a lot to say. He's got the aesthetic prowess to do it. And I thought this movie was incredibly disturbing. I thought the fact that it was in black and white only enhanced the disturbing nature.
Yep.
I saw some photos in color and was like, eh.
I don't even know where I remember seeing the color photos, but they're like, look at the eyes of my mother.
I'm like, I don't want to see that.
If it had been in color, I think it would have
like,
lost.
Why would you do that?
It's a very specific look.
It's a very specific look. But this was one of those movies that just escalated in its disturbing nature as it went. And you kind of just... You settled in for its slow burn, and once you kind of adjusted to it, you were like, oh, where's this going to go? Oh, it's going to get worse. Oh, it's going to get worse. Oh, she's doing that. Oh, my God. We're jumping forward in time a little bit, and it's just gotten worse. But it is a – I think it's a phenomenal debut. I saw it at Sundance, and I saw a lot of great reactions. I think it's just a fantastic film and really, really, really well executed.
Yeah,
I agree. It's my number eight as well. And honestly, just to add, I agree with everything you said, Ryan. And just to add on top of that, I really enjoyed, I don't know if maybe it's because I was just patient in that moment, but I think this is a movie that does require you to be in more of a like patient mindset.
Oh, absolutely.
You just
you
have
need
to
be
give
awake,
yourself over to it.
Present.
Yeah,
you need to be present.
You do. And I was, and I saw it at Fantastic Fest, and I didn't know what to expect. I know you had told me that you really liked it, but you and I don't see eye to eye sometimes, except for right now. We literally. But I wanted to say, too, that I really enjoyed, we see a lot of portrayals of, I don't want to say madness, but characters like this, but they're often men. And I really, really loved watching a woman, watching a character study of a woman in such a way, because it all felt very plausible
and
to me.
What was interesting, too, is that it was because of the inciting incident. Like, if there was, if...
Or was it, though?
Well,
I don't know.
Yeah, I mean, might have been inherent in there, but you don't know. I just felt like, oh my God, if this trigger didn't happen,
the opening was already dark, though, right? There's already some weird stuff going on.
I feel like the choice to, not kill him, but put him in the garage was that doesn't spoil too much.
It's pretty early on.
Yeah, that's pretty early. But I feel like the family decision to do that said that there was crazy shit going on long before the inciting incident.
But that wasn't her decision.
Yeah, but that means that
what else is going on is sort of what...
Well, it's learned behavior. So you're dealing with a kid
exactly.
who sees this... it could already be something in her soul if you believe in that stuff. But she definitely is brought up in a way and then takes... It's like she's so... What it does do is a good portrayal of isolation.
Yeah.
It's like here's a person who's growing up isolated. It's very American Gothic. And the one thing that kept jumping out is like, I never liked the adaptations of Jack Ketchum, ever. Mm-mm. I never liked them. And then I watched this one. I was like, this isn't a Jack Ketchum thing, and yet it feels... was like, more like Jack Ketchum, you know? So,
and can I say an exceptional scene that stands out to me? Because I just watched it and I really loved it a lot. It's pretty high on my list. You know, because you were saying about how usually, like, this sort of serial killer story is a guy, but the perspective of a woman, I love the scene where she picks up a girl from the bar and brings her home and, that awkward, almost date-esque vibe.
And that also was only scene that felt modern.
Yeah.
Because the bar, suddenly you're like, oh, this is set now? Yeah. I thought it was 1960.
Yeah, I thought it was 1950.
I love the same reaction.
Because the girl seemed modern. She seemed like from right now.
But I think that's one of those, like, choices as a director that pushes it over. We're like, there's something special. Like, you know, that's one of the scenes you could take out of context and just, it works so beautifully.
Well, absolutely. And I think too, this movie, speaking of patience, really affords the patience to empathize, but also scrutinize a woman in such a way, the behavior, like allowing a woman to behave in such a way, but giving her enough respect and time and character, essentially. Mm-hmm. And the performance by Kika was amazing. Yeah. So,
and it's almost the difference between a feminine serial killer in this context and a masculine like Henry is almost the idea of, it's like a monster. He's like a monster. And this, you never think that. You're watching a person go quietly about their behavior.
You almost feel bad for
her. Yeah, it's almost idiosyncratic behavior, and then you're like, no, don't do that. Whereas if it was Henry, you'd be like, oh my god, this guy's awful. Yeah. This is like a monstrous thing. So I thought that energy was just, I mean, if you watch the movie Monster with Charlize Theron playing the real, that's different too. She feels like a monster. So I think it's very high up on my list, and I think it's another fantastic debut.
Right. Number seven for me, and this is a film that had a lot of hype right around its release that I missed, and thankfully managed to go spoiler-free right until I watched it on Blu-ray. For me, it's 10 Cloverfield Lane.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, that's on my list, too.
Because, I mean, you could argue there's almost two movies in there, but the first movie, I mean, I like the whole thing. I loved the whole thing. But when you get actors of that caliber, and, I mean, John Goodman, it's got to be one of the best.
Oh, he's great.
That's probably my favorite performance of the year.
Yeah.
John Goodman and Mary Elizabeth Winstead, and kind of not knowing where it's going to go. I mean, that was one of those movies I was so happy I was able to go blindly into it, and all I knew was the title. And that maybe it would hint to something weird because Cloverfield's in the title. But I just thought it was exceptional, and that's my number seven.
You just made me sad for leaving it off my list.
I did.
Huh? Yeah, it's a really good – no, it's a really good movie, but I definitely was in that camp where the last 20 minutes I was like, it's still good, but it didn't match the first
– I thought that had to be in there.
The first three quarters,
it's further
I was
down
blown
on
away.
My list, so I'll save it. But.
It didn't make my list, but it's a damn good film.
Yeah.
Yeah.
All right. Well, then, Elric, what's your number seven?
Oh, yeah. It was your number eight. The Invitation, Karen Kusuma. Again, that's a movie when I saw it could have been top three. It was like there's things, little things, nitpicky things. Like, I just think it's like when you have that diverse, every single person from every subgroup is at a dinner party. Sometimes that grates a little because it's maybe trying a little too hard. Feels a little Echo Parky, but, you know, we are recording near there, so it's okay.
I think we're actually in Echo Park.
I'm sure they were in Echo Park.
Yeah. But I thought it was like, really smart. And it took its time, and again, it's this new. You know, I will never use the word elevated horror. What it is adult horror. This is not meant for a 13-year-old to stumble on this movie. They'd probably be bored. But as adults watching what actually scares you and the loss of a child, usually the loss of a child feels. Besides, Don't Look Now, it usually feels like a quick crux to throw and give a person backstory. And this one, I felt the actor's pain when he was having flashbacks and couldn't relate to his wife, and he's sitting on a bed, and he's just like, I can't even relate to people anymore.
Yeah.
And then bad things start happening, and especially about a cult, and it's all very ambiguous about what they really are and stuff. There's things in there that are very ambiguous, and I think that was great. I just think it's a really strong movie, and I think it's great that she returned with something so serious after something that a lot of us like, but got so maligned for maybe being a little bigger or sillier, you know, with Jennifer's Body.
Yeah.
Becca?
Purge election year.
What?
Yeah.
Slave to Blum.
I really liked this one. And I think I've always had the three Purge films have always made my top 10 lists all the years.
Okay.
But this one, I have to say, is I like it better than one or two.
Oh, really? I like 10 more.
Yeah. I know. I mean, one was okay for me. I think it was probably like number 10. And then last year I was, for the second one, I was like, I love that they expanded the universe. And this year I was like, and now they have a fucking message. So, I just had a lot of fun with it. But at the same time.
We've always had a message in our
movies. Get out of here.
wait, were you there for three or the other two you weren't here around, right?
I was just here for three. Yeah.
For three.
Yeah.
Okay.
No, Yeah, I love this one. It definitely, I think it fell at a right time with politics. It made me feel like...
It didn't work.
Yeah, it didn't.
It failed
I was like, we're fighting yeah, against exactly. it. And then it didn't,
yeah, it didn't
work.
At all.
But yeah, I just
no
had...
One, no one listened. Yeah, was the movie good? Made a lot of money, but no one listened.
No, see, Ryan and I had this email conversation where he said, no one listened. And I said, yes, they did. They just were on the other side.
Oh, yeah. Yeah.
they got the wrong message out of it. That's the problem.
Actually, we did recently. I'm going to say this is kind of funny. We did get a comment on iTunes recently.
Oh,
and it
so
just
said,
great show, except when they get political.
Oh.
And I'm like, dude, I'm sorry. That's just who we are.
It's Los
sorry.
Angeles.
I'm
yeah,
a socialist.
The whole city tends to kind of lean that way.
My number seven is Train to Busan.
Nice.
I saw this at a lovely Korean theater here in town, and I just got swept away by the pure kind of Irwin Allen-esque spectacle and a kind of like zombies on a train kind of hook to it. And by the end, I was a weepy mess because there was such a great emotional hook to it regarding a father and his family that it was just like, oh man, you're hitting me out of time right now where I'm just like, if I was that dad on a train, I'd do exactly what he's doing.
And maybe best side character in any movie.
Yes.
Like he might be best supporting actor besides John Goodman.
Agreed.
That guy might be the best.
That was actually the first image
incredible.
I texted
yeah.
Ryan when yeah. I got out of it.
And
I was
like,
this
that's
dude.
The dude.
He's
that's
like,
the
yep.
dude. But it's also really, really strong action directing. And what they were able to do, too, was, you know, show me some zombie stuff I've never seen before, rewrite a little bit of the rules. It's, again, very tropey when it comes to the zombies, but it's not about just the zombies. It's about this kind of emotional anchor that's going on regarding a father and survival and all that stuff. So, and I love the scope of it. I just thought it was fantastic. And I really wish they wouldn't remake it.
That was definitely the hardest one I left off. That was the one I up to
you
the last.
You left that
minute.
Off.
Whoa!
That's how good, man. I was looking at my films. I was like, oh
now,
my god.
Do you like horror movies?
Yeah, that and 10 Cloverfield Lane. What is wrong with you?
Yeah,
oh boy.
That's what I'm saying.
Oh
way
boy.
More less
but
studio.
We put on Evolution.
Damn, Becca.
Oh man.
Damn.
The hey, Becca.
Are out.
Hey, Becca. Let's contact cinema, please, because people who cackle about a movie they haven't fucking seen can go fuck themselves. Sorry, I have zero respect for that.
Oh,
at least I saw Train to Busan, motherfucker. So take it.
I've seen it. It's
you have not seen Evolution, so sit down.
You're right.
Even okay. though you would see it and hate it, so that's all right. So don't see it.
I'm probably not going to see it, all right?
Damn, Clark.
So no cackling. No cackling.
This is
welcome to the Bloodcast.
It's on.
Clark's
over here
back
in our corner.
We're not even in the top five yet.
Oh, boy.
Clark, right. Number seven.
Number seven. My number seven is Autopsy of Jane Doe.
Nice.
And I just to add real fast to the previous conversation, once again, I want to say how important this is because when I saw it at Fantastic Fest, Ryan, you had seen it and you were like, yeah, pretty good. And I was like, okay. And then the only description in the pamphlet was a sheriff finds a dead woman at a crime scene and tasks a coroner and his son to figure out her cause of death. That was the description.
Mm-hmm.
And I was like, okay. So I went in and I was like, well, if this is boring, then I'll just eat a hamburger and drink a drink and then I'll be done in an hour and a half. And in the like you guys were saying earlier, the reveals, the slow peel away to find out exactly what was going on. I swear, I had the thought about 45 minutes in, like, how did they think of this?
Yeah.
This is because it's not anything... In a way, it's a chamber piece, and it's like, you know, yeah, something weird happens in a morgue. Okay, that's not necessarily revolutionary, but the way they did it and what they did, I was just like, who are these guys that wrote this? I wanna talk to them and, like, figure it out. And yes, I will say I feel like the third act gets a little cliche, but mm-hmm. I don't care. I didn't care at that point either. I was on board with it the whole time, and it's a fun little ride. And if you haven't seen the trailers for it, don't.
Yeah,
just watch
it's a hard
it.
One.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, avoid at all costs. But yeah, go in as clean as you can, not knowing what's going on.
Yeah.
Mystery is still valuable in movies. You
no,
know
absolutely.
I mean?
My number six is Hush, which
nice.
We've already mentioned. And again, you know, for me, it was one of those pleasant surprises because I haven't seen his first movie, but I saw Oculus much later than everybody else did. And when I, you know, and people were like so divided on that movie.
Yeah.
There's
and
a
then
lot
when
of
I,
our lot of listeners who hate it. And I'm like, really? You
but
hate
like,
it
so I was like kind of expecting something totally different. When I watched it, I'm like, this is great. Like, I was like, this is really confidently directed and really original and unique. And I like the actors. So going into Hush almost within the first 5 minutes, I'm like, oh, this guy, like you said, I'm like, he's like, you know, one of our masters of horror. Mm-hmm. I think mm-hmm. without doubt. Like the next couple, and he's got, what's great is he's got so many movies like, you know, kind of coming out within the next year or two. And he's at the top of his game. So I think we'll keep seeing that growth.
Well, yeah, him and James Wan in terms of just, and Fetty, in terms of craft, mm-hmm. that word craft, like they could give, mm-hmm. I think you could give them anything and they would craft make the drum, best of it.
It's not just aesthetic. It's not just technical craft. It's storytelling craft. It's,
you know. Yeah, and I've heard a lot of criticisms about things that happen within Hush. Like, you know, obviously it's a deaf girl. Is she deaf? Yeah, she's deaf in the house. With a guy in a mask and all that, but I don't care. Like, you know, it's like, well, no one would ever do that, or this would never happen, or blah blah blah. But I was like, yeah, but it's a movie. It's
and also,
fantasy.
I think part of our love of this was like the release pattern. I think really helped. It was the opposite of Blair Witch. Was I heard about it that Ryan was at a festival. I saw an advertisement for it, and then a week later, it was on Netflix, and I was like, oh, I got to watch a festival film. I love that feeling.
Yeah, it's the same reason I love Spectral, where I was just like, oh, this just appeared in my living room.
It does feel special. You feel like you're being rewarded.
Appealing about
that,
and quite frankly, I think that's what they're doing with Gerald's Game. I mean, we know it's coming, but it's going to be a Netflix original.
Yeah, it's Netflix.
And I hope they do more of that kind of stuff, where they just surprise us with a Netflix movie.
You know, I know this. You guys, this will get groans, maybe, but The Babysitter, they just announced New Line has sold it to that's McGee's movie.
Oh.
You know, we were talking about this on Nightmares as well. Like, it's so cool to hear this really weird premise: a little 12-year-old boy is in love with his babysitter, and you know, she is a part of a satanic cult and trying to kill him.
Oh, cool.
That's the log line for this crazy movie and that McGee did, and it's going to come to Netflix. And I just think, I agree. Like, it's so cool when this weird stuff just appears and you're like, this is just for me.
Can't wait. That's cool. Elric, you're number six.
Oh, man, I didn't even know. Here we go. Bum, bum, bum. Number six. Oh, man, I thought it was higher. Eyes of My Mother is at number six.
Okay.
It could have easily been my number two in a normal year, to be honest. It's like we've talked about a couple times, it's like 15 minutes short of being a masterpiece. Like, number one. But it has that atmosphere. I don't think we have to say much more, except that it makes me happy that people are making original films. I didn't feel borrowed from anything. I felt like it was completely what it was. And the guy expressed himself, and I hope he keeps doing it. Great movie.
Yeah.
Becca?
The Wailing.
Ooh. Oh, at number six.
Yeah, number six. I went into this not knowing what to expect. I just heard it was really cool and loved the shifts in it, how it went from almost comedic to bleak to really freaking scary. And
did you watch that one at home?
Yeah.
See, when I watched it, I was like, I don't know if I could have gone through it. I mean, I love it. It's on my list too. But I was like, when I saw it on the screen, I was like, there are so many crazy things in here that I'm not sure how I would have viewed it. I just don't even know how it would view from home.
It played fine. Okay. I mean, there was definitely like, because it is also a long movie.
Yeah, it's really long and very foreign.
Yeah, I remember it and very foreign. Where like, you're like, are they laughing right now? Is this supposed to be funny? Because I found myself, I watched it with Dave and the whole time, like for the first half, we were like, is this supposed to be funny? Because it's funny.
Yeah, it's funny.
And it definitely comes across as funny, but you're like, is this just funny because, you know, this is like a cultural difference or something like that? And then after a while you get, it's supposed to be funny. But then it gets really bleak and then you're like, oh, that was the shift. But somehow the shift really works. And it was, definitely one of my favorite films.
I feel like they're the only filmmakers in South Korea who can do those tonal shifts.
Yeah.
Like there's just bonker tonal shifts that you go with because, and like The Host, it reminds me of that.
It did.
But the scary parts are even scarier in this because there's an exorcism in quote marks because it's not an exorcism like we've ever seen.
It feels more like a disease.
Yeah, it's just
the same
a bizarre
time.
Sequence.
And
that's...
the kids in peril, and it just kind of hits all of these notes that by the end, I left a pit in my stomach, but I'd spent the first 45 minutes laughing.
Yeah, it's a special movie, totally unique.
Mm-hmm. Now on Netflix as well.
Yes.
Oh, cool.
Yeah.
Nice.
My number six is Billy O'Brien's I Am Not a Serial Killer.
Yeah.
Nice.
Good movie.
It's something that I saw on the festival circuit earlier this year, and I was just, I don't know, I was just in awe by its kind of charm. I described it when I came out as Fright Night meets Disturbia, and that's probably, and also a little bit of Dexter. Rob talked about it earlier this month when he saw it, but, you know, it's just that it has this kind of like 80s-esque, you know, kid. It's like, it felt like, you know, everybody keeps saying, oh, it's like the era of Stranger Things. We're going to see Stranger Things rip off. But it kind of reminded me of an 80s film in which we're just following this kid who discovers that evil is afoot in his neighborhood. Mm-hmm. But the kid is also a sociopath. And he's just kind of holding back the urge to kill. And I just love the little
I love the performances. Max Records is fantastic in it. Christopher Lloyd is really well done. And I honestly did not see the end coming because because there's a pretty big reveal. There's two really big reveals, and the first one that occurs, it was genuine shock. And the way it was directed, I thought it was really well done. And then the finale, deeply emotional and kind of sad, but hopeful, because it left me with hope, and I wanted to see kind of more adventures of this kid, and knowing that it was based on a book series and blah blah blah,
there's plenty
there was plenty to go, and I kind of cheated and I read some of the synopsis other ones, and I was like, oh, that sounds kind of cool.
This just missed out. I was curious about maybe swapping out Lights Out for this one, but
It was the one that got crossed out for Dupree.
Oh, that was your 10.
It was my number 10.
Switched it over
Dupree.
And this movie is also on Netflix right
now,
right?
Yes, that's how I just saw it. Yeah, I think it's better than Don't Breathe. But I want to revisit it. It got me – I kind of want to read the books.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Oh, no, dude, this is up totally up your alley.
Yeah.
I don't know. It was in terms of talking about indie flavor and indie films – I think you should look no further than to this film,
Good double feature with Eyes of My Mother, because it's the same thing, but done totally different styles. Yeah. One is kind of comic and fun, and the other is just pure go for it. She's doing it,
All right.
I loved this one. It's in my mentions.
Cool.
This is
it is
one
really
of my
good
favorites.
It's one of my mentions, too. I really, really liked it. And I liked more than anything, in this movie that it was an exploration of humanity juxtaposed against a lot of different things, which was really special and cool.
And also loss.
Absolutely. And I mean, honestly, not to get too deep, but what is it to be human if not to experience loss and in a lot of different ways, and love and emotions, and the fact that your lead character cannot experience emotions? Yeah. Mm-hmm. How human is he as compared to the other things and people in his world?
Yeah, absolutely. And there was kind of there's this weird ticking clock that you can feel. It might not be on the screen, but you're just kind of waiting for the moment for him to break.
Yeah.
And that's what's kind of had that, even though there's a lot of threats going on the screen, you're kind of on the edge of your seat because you're hoping that this kid doesn't go off the deep end.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah.
And really, that's the rare part. I think when I always cite The Following as that show that made life so cheap you didn't care. This does the opposite. It makes it so valid that you're so worried that he'll make that choice.
Yeah.
That's rare in a horror film to care that much. So it's a great performance.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I agree.
My number, are we on six?
Yep.
Six.
My six is Don't Breathe. Just to add to the previous conversation real fast, I didn't have any expectations for this movie, to be honest. I think I went just because I felt like there was a screening or something, and so I went. And my experience with Fede is that I've interviewed him a handful of times. I think he's really smart, and I think he showed that he is incredibly talented with the Evil Dead movie. And I don't dislike his Evil Dead. I just didn't have any fun with it. That's just my, I didn't have fun with it. But with that being said, and Evil Dead felt very heavy to me. It just felt like I was under a big weight. Don't Breathe felt light. It fucking moved. Yeah. For me, at least. I know some people didn't. Some people really hate Don't Breathe, which, okay.
Oh, really? I didn't know that. I've only heard people like it.
Mainly because they're all shitty characters. Yeah. And they're like, I don't like anybody. I'm like, yeah, but that's the point.
Well, that's what made it feel heavy, because I'm the opposite. Okay. I liked Don't Breathe, but I liked Evil Dead better, because that, for me, I was having fun. I was the effects were awesome. Yeah. It was really cool nods
but
to
they're
the
bad
original.
Guys, so they're not, we can't love them too much and that they're breaking into some guy's
Don't
home.
Breathe felt like a constant sense of anxiety and doom.
How interesting.
That I didn't feel with Evil Dead.
Well, there you go.
Yeah.
There's something for everyone in Fede Alvarez.
Mark's like, whatever, Becca.
Yeah.
It does make me curious that if he worked with somebody else's script, because I do think he's shown in those two films, he really is capable.
An
visual
incredible
filmmaker.
Director. Yeah.
And one of the only ones where, besides maybe Jeremy Saulnier, where I feel the hits. I feel anything you do physically, I feel it physically.
Yeah.
And there aren't many people right now doing that.
And
it's also sound design.
That's a big part of it. Yeah. It's all of it. It's the whole package, right? Yeah. How you orchestrate
something. Yeah. Sorry. Who's next?
Go ahead, Clark.
No,
we're so polite.
The last thing I wanted to say is just that everything he did, I felt was earned. I really felt like Fede earned everything in Don't Breathe. And so that was very cool. So I liked that.
I was just going to say that the thing I'm excited about with Don't Breathe is whatever they're teasing for the sequel.
Yeah.
Because it's a movie that I don't see a sequel to at all. and like Raimi and all these guys have gone. I was like, his idea is so bonkers. It's amazing.
I was at that lunch, the luncheon for the Blu-ray, where they
said
the
that?
Quote was, you know, Raimi was like, it's the best idea for a sequel I've ever heard. And Fede and his writing partner were like, yeah, it's a bit anarchic and or did I say that wrong? Roared wrong.
No,
there's a lot of anarchy.
Anarchic.
Anyway, but there's and they said we don't think a studio is going to be into this, but this is our idea, and it was kind of like, all right, well now we want to know what that is.
It has to be. If it's said on Thanksgiving, like he's coming to dinner, it would be the greatest home invasion Thanksgiving movie ever.
I just saw on Twitter that line about you saying your next is a Thanksgiving movie.
Oh yeah,
and I was like, brilliant.
Wouldn't that be the best thing ever? I mean,
how did they miss that?
I know, it's like it already is one.
Let's just pretend it is.
And it's just put a turkey on the table and you're okay, anyway.
I'm not even kidding. I think this film is now Don't Breathe because of the thing, which we won't reveal. It is a forever Thanksgiving film.
Yes, I agree with that too.
It's fun.
Okay, what do we have to number 5?
Yeah, we're breaking the other half now.
This is it, the top 5. My top 5 is The Eyes of My Mother.
Nice.
And we talked a lot about it, so we can move right on to Elric's top number 5.
And Becca just mentioned this one. This was, I would say, the most unique movie I saw this year, up there with one that's a little higher, called The Wailing.
The Shallows, right?
The Shallows, yeah. One of the most unique. But no, I thought The Wailing, like we saw it at the South Korean theater as well, and it's funny to me because Train to Busan was a really great movie, but it's funny to me that I'm going with this one instead. But there was something so and when I say foreign, I don't mean foreign language, because I see those all the time. This was one of the few movies I've ever seen where there's sequences where I'm like, I culturally do not know what's going on right now, but I'm going along for the ride because the characters are fun, and it was maybe a little scarier because of that. There are certain moments where you're like, this is unsettling me. And I remember we all felt a little different when we came out of it, but when I finished the movie, I was like, man, that is a movie. Like, that's something to see in a theater with crazy stuff going, and you just went for the ride, you know?
Yeah, so, and that speaks to our taste, because it didn't make my top 10, and it's because of those. I felt it was a little foreign for me.
Oh,
yeah, I like it a lot. I think it's a great movie, but it's a little too long, and there's a little too much stuff in it that I don't connect with.
But there is a sequence, if you haven't seen it, and if you think you're up for like a challenging fun film, there's just a sequence we're kind of all talking about it, which is kind of an exorcism, but it goes on for like 20 minutes.
It is so, and it's like unyielding.
But it builds the tension so well, and the pressure. It's a fun movie. So that took the number 5.
All right, Becca, number 5.
Number 5 for me, The Witch, or Vavitch.
The Witch.
Witch of...
can we clarify why? What? I know I've seen the V and the V or whatever, but wasn't that just like...
It was just a cool type.
It was a typography. Yeah.
It was like old
English typography.
It's supposed to look old English.
I was really asking for myself because sometimes my...
It drove me absolutely nuts when I saw journalists typing VVITC. Yeah. And I was like, guys, come on.
And we definitely didn't do that one, but I love the Vavitch. anyway, so that made my number 5. And I put it on my top 10 list last year because that one definitely had, I'll call it, a very kind of graduated release where it played in a lot of theaters before it did like the widespread theatrical. And it was
festival
right
around screening seemed to be huge. Right?
Yeah. And it was then like every festival.
Yeah.
Cause by the time it did the theatrical, like the full theatrical, I'd already seen it twice. So I put it on my list last year too. But it's number 5 this year. I think it was a little higher last year, but yeah, it's just awesome. Feels small, but with big ideas. And I love the goat.
There's
Black
no
Phillip.
One.
There's Black Phillip, baby.
Black Phillip.
There's no director this year who I'm more excited to see their next movie. Like at all.
Yeah, exactly.
That's the guy where you're like, oh yeah, I don't know what, like, and if it's Nosferatu, bring
it. Yeah, I'm all for it.
Like, I am all about you doing Nosferatu.
Or Rasputin for a while.
I think that's a TV thing, and maybe it happened.
Right?
It might have happened.
I am so excited to see what that guy
because
does
that is
next.
So uncommon to like, you're making your first movie. Like, Eyes of My Mother is also kind of uncommon, but to like double down and go, whoa, it's going to be historic period piece, detailed, driven.
We need a goat.
Yeah, it's just very unusual. It's up on my list too. So
yeah. Ryan, number 5.
My number 5 is The Wailing as well. I thought it was just an exhausting, really intense experience. And I, like Becca said, it kind of rolls through these different changes in emotion and tone, and you just kind of go with it. And 3 hours later, I was just a sweaty, exhausted mess because I was like, oh my God. And that exorcism sequence, what works so well about it is because it's happening across town, and the person that is it's supposed to be kind of defying is doing their own separate thing. So you have these two lateral, like these two intense things happening on different rails, riding at the same time. And you're like, oh my God, are they going to find out about this? Are they going to help this girl?
what is going on? It's just it's a movie filled with madness.
Yeah.
And that's what I loved about
There's a
it.
Character who I won't ruin, but there's a character that I don't know as a Western audience whether she's an angel or just a girl or a demon throughout most of the film, right? And my friend who saw it with his Korean girlfriend said it's a totally different movie if you're from the culture, because she from frame one goes, yeah, that's a very famous kind of demon from our culture.
Wow.
And I'm like, so they're watching it from a totally different perspective. When he told me that, I was like, oh,
that's
that makes
like
sense.
Their Freddy Krueger. Like,
well, it's just like they have different myths.
That's cool. Well, the other thing too is I didn't latch onto is like kind of the cultural tension going on between Japan and Korea, because you know the Japanese guy is like living out in the sticks, and they're like,
that's right,
it's
Japanese.
And they're like, that guy, that Japanese guy out there, what a piece of shit. And it's like, whoa, what's going on?
Why do you hate on that guy?
But there was something going on there, you know, and
that we don't know, because we're not experts.
Yeah.
And you had seen other films by that director, right, Ro? Yellow Sea, was that one?
Oh, the Yellow Sea is amazing.
So if people like that, they should check that out. I haven't seen it.
I like the Yellow Sea much more than, I mean, I like The Wailing, but The Wailing is definitely a director like that's going for it.
Yeah.
And The Yellow Sea is definitely a more straightforward, like, kind of falls in that like the vengeance style of a lot of the South Korean films, where a guy gets like kind of tricked into, not tricked, but he wants to get out of debt, so he decides to agree to a hit. And obviously the hit goes completely wrong, and now everybody's after him. It's really intense and really cool.
I see that.
Let's see. Clark, number five.
My number five is 10 Cloverfield Lane. Just to add on to what we've already said, I sincerely, I've seen it twice, and I really and truly did not see any separation or feel any separation between the beginning and the end, or you know, whatever reshoots took place. To me, it actually really did work as a 90-minute Twilight Zone episode, which I loved, and I loved the climax. And I love Cloverfield.
Me too.
And I am 100% so happy that they are taking a bit of an anthology approach to the franchise. I believe the rumor was for Cloverfield 2, when they were actually talking about it, was like the same night of the invasion but in a different part of the world. And I loved that idea, because they don't need to revisit those characters or even that monster. It's just like, let's go somewhere else and experience something like this. So I really, 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 really liked this movie.
Some of the best characters for sure.
So fun.
Yeah.
And I watched it with my mom. Like, my mom likes science fiction, and she likes weird stuff, and so I was home, and she said, let's watch a movie, and I said, well, you might like this, and we watched it, and she loved it, you know? So it's cool that you can, it's a movie you can watch with friends or in a theater, but you can also watch it on VOD at home with your parents, and it's great.
Yeah.
All righty, so number four for me is The Witch. And quite frankly, I mean, I saw, and I think me and Becca watched it, but it was a screener of it.
Yeah, we had a screener.
Elric's number four as well. But let me tell you, I got the Blu-ray, and again, I mean,
my number four too.
Hey!
All right. That makes me real curious as to what your number two and what number one are.
Oh, yeah, three more to go. But really, the only thing I want to say about The Witch that hasn't already been said is it's really one of those movies that I think the Blu-ray. You know, I have a pretty good theatrical setup at home, and I hit all the lights, I put it loud. And watch it with the subtitles, because the script is, I mean, I know it's difficult to understand, but I say that because I think the script is so brilliantly written. And I watch most movies with the subtitles anyways, because I don't want to miss anything and I kind of want to know what's going on. But it really added a lot, knowing 100% what every single person was saying at all times. And I thought it was just such a brilliantly written movie. And I think Elric and I were talking about, like, just the ending just... It just kind of knocks you off your socks. It's just
perfect.
So beautifully cinematic.
It's basically a perfect movie. And it is kind of actually surprising me even thinking that it isn't higher in some ways. But from here on, they're all kind of more or less equal.
You know what?
Equal,
and for me, it's personal taste.
Yeah, and I haven't seen it again. Most of these movies I've only seen once, and I think some of them would change where they place. And I think The Witch is one of those films that's so unique the way and the father's voice even in the film still resonates in my mind, and the girl's performance is just amazing. And you could see lots of ways the story could go from there. It was kind of cool when it ends. It's a perfect ending, but then I could imagine the next scene. I can imagine her going back to the first town where they were ostracized and just going, oh, I'm here to work, you know, moving with the family and then fucking shit up. You know, like it's a great world.
All right. So that was your four.
That
and
was
Clark's
my four,
four,
too. Yeah.
Yeah, it was my four, too. Shall I chime in now?
No, yes.
Do that.
What I wanted to add is what you were saying, Rob, about the subtitles. What's funny about that is the criticism I hear of The Witch from a lot of people is that, oh, I watched it and it was dumb. Like, I didn't understand and I didn't know what was going on and it's not that scary and all this stuff. And I would be lying if I said I didn't feel some of those things. I didn't feel like it was dumb, but I kind of, the first time I saw it, I was kind of like, okay. And I am such a brat because I walked out and I was like, could have used more witch. I could have used more witch. But then I saw it a second time. And once I had already kind of known what I was getting into, God, it was the same with the Babadook for me. I picked up on so much more. And to your point about the subtitles, what I love about it is the miscommunication. You know, so much to me, so much of that story is a family that is not talking to each other.
Yeah.
And so the fact that we as an audience can't always pick up on exactly what they're saying, it's almost like we're a part of the family, like we're in it. Mm-hmm. And I loved that. And also I feel like, again, with watching this young woman and her mother, this two generations of women and watching what they're going through, I connected so much with some things with my own mom or some stuff, you know, with my own siblings or my own dad or whatever. And I just feel like this is a movie, and horror is great for this, but this is a movie specifically where your life, you can bring so much to this one. Or you can just see it as a fable and folklore, and it's got some disturbing imagery, and there you go. So I think that I love that there's so much going on to it, but that this is such a personal film for an audience.
Yeah. Well, it goes back to what you said about Eyes of My Mother. It's a movie you give yourself over to.
Yes.
If you do, you'll be rewarded.
Right.
That's how I feel. Yeah. Becca, you're number four.
Green Room. We debated a lot about kind of what qualifies as horror, and I know, like, I tend to have a much more relaxed opinion of what qualifies as horror than you guys do, Handmaiden, but it's in my mentions. But Green Room, I'm definitely fucking calling horror. The amount of tension that it's got and everything. It was just one of those screenings this year. I didn't see it while I was in the theater. I ended up seeing it at home, and I actually wish I had seen this one in the theater, just because the sound design and the scope was so lovely. So it was just very frenetic, and it was a fun time. I shouldn't say it was fun. I was riveted the entire time.
It's kind of fun, but yeah, it's a mixture. Yeah, I know what you're saying, though.
Yeah,
you can have carnage and fun.
Ryan, number four.
My number four is The Invitation.
Nice.
You know, I think we covered this pretty well. I mean, you know, you're talking about kind of like the sense of we talk about loss in horror films, and it does it really well. And one of my biggest pet peeves is when you set up a horror film and you do the kind of loss of child thing as a way to kind of get on the parent's side. But, you know, Karin and the writers behind this film did it really well. And the kind of like the motor they gave Logan through the film kind of shifted gears. Everything about that loss was being used through the kind of paranoia that was happening during that dinner sequence. And that's what I loved about it. It wasn't always... What they kind of did is they shifted it brilliantly to go from here we're talking about loss and we're talking about the death of a child and we're talking about all of this to full-blown paranoia in such a deftly handled way that I thought it was fantastic. And then that kind of ending, the denouement, was just like a hammer to the skull. Like you didn't expect that at all, you know?
Yeah.
And it hinted at a far, you know, a wide-reaching threat that it was just like, oh, my God, you left the theater – feeling very paranoid yourself, you know, not knowing who your neighbor was going to be. So I thought, again, like you said, great comeback for Karin Kusama. And, you know, I'm eager to see what she does next. And what it looks like she's going to do is this thing for Fox that she's been developing for a while now. So
and that'll be the horror anthology.
XX.
Well,
oh, no.
That's different.
That's a different thing. XX is...
Yeah. Because my son's in her story.
Oh,
that's true. Well, unless he's been cut. He's in the dream scene. with a crazy hand. That's all I know.
Nice.
I know nothing else about it.
I feel dead inside because...
oh, God. No, just end there.
Wow. Because I could not connect to The Invitation.
Okay. Interesting.
All.
Okay.
I didn't think I was going to, but then it drew me in because it was what I'm talking about. It's like... Oh, yawn. Parents are grieving over a dead kid. Got it. But then once all of these periphery characters started coming in with their own baggage, that's what kind of got me through the gate.
Really, mine was when the cult, like the first mention, the beginning part where it's just a dinner party and dead kids, I was like, oh God, this is going to be a slog. Elric will love this one.
I do like
and
cult movies,
then
actually.
As soon as they mentioned cult, I was like, who said cult? I'm here.
Yeah. Cults are fascinating. Yeah. But I mean, I just love that you said you felt dead inside.
I feel dead because you guys are also, you know, emotionally so connected to this film, and I just felt nothing.
It could be like the other ones. You never know on second viewing. It might be one of those like The Witch, because they are very serious movies. Yeah. And maybe if you're not in the mood for that at the time, who knows?
Yeah. It is on Netflix now, so you can give it another chance.
I can if I want to.
Yeah.
All right, so here we go. We're in the top three. My number three might be surprising to some, but not to others. Trash Fire, Ricky Bates' new movie. I really loved it. I mean, Excision was one of my favorite movies when that came out, and it was one of those debuts where I just like watched this movie and I was so jealous that I didn't make it. I was like, this is the sort of thing in my sensibilities I wish I wrote and directed. And then I stalked Ricky on Twitter until he became my friend, and now he's my friend. And I liked Suburban Gothic, his follow-up, but that was definitely it wasn't his voice, but definitely you see Excision and then you see Trash Fire. And I was lucky enough to read the script before he made it. And he's got one of those distinct voices. It's just him, you know? And that can mean that things get darkly funny. And you can have kind of fun with the movie, but Trash Fire, like, says aloud. I mean, Elric and I saw it with an audience, and it says aloud a lot of things that I guess a lot of couples think. It looks at a relationship in a very honest way, which can be kind of funny to most people and a little offensive to others. But I loved it. And then Trash Fire is actually like a relationship drama that collides with a horror movie, essentially. It becomes a horror movie more in its finale. And it's got one of those, not a spoiler to say, but much like Excision, a sucker punch of an ending. And that's why it's so high on my list, is because it really fucked me up to the point where I couldn't stop thinking about it for a couple of days. So,
because I really like this film too, and I think if this is my normal regular film list, it might even be on my top 10 for just films of the year. But it felt to me like just like I wouldn't put Happiness on this list. I view him as Todd Solondz-ish, and I love Happiness, but that doesn't mean you're wrong at all. I just didn't feel the horror elements in this one as much as Excision. But who cares? Like, it's just so that was just me personally. But I love the movie, and I think it's a smart movie.
Well, like what Adrien Grenier has, you know, is like it's. The horror is hidden, you know, in this house, the horror is hidden away, you know, within him, you know, he's prone to epilepsy, he's prone to seizures, and that's kind of hidden. You never know when
it's
going to
hit. And he's been laced with like a false memory.
Yeah. Right.
I don't want to spoil too much, but you believe one thing and it's something else.
I was really impressed with this film too. I mean, it's a scathing look at family dynamic and relationships, but, and also, I'm blanking on her name. Angela
Trimbor.
From Halloween 2.
Halloween 2 and Final
One
Girls.
One of my favorite performances of the year.
Really well
across
done.
Across the board.
Yep, like really great.
We gave her the award of the Knoxville Horror Film Festival.
We did.
Fighting saying, I think this is one of the great performances.
Yeah, because some of them disagreed with us and we were like, she's epic in this film.
What, I think even more than Grenier, she's the thing that grounds that movie and makes you care, you know?
Yeah.
Yeah, well, that's my number.
I'm glad you picked that one. Again, like you, I'm going with something a little stranger. This one I feel deeply passionate about. It's one of my favorite viewing experiences of the year. But like The Wailing Slofarn talked about last week, it's Demon. For me, that film on a big screen, there was just something, the craft of that film was incredible. And the only criticism I had, and we talked about it just in the last episode, but was just that if it ended in a bigger way or in a more obviously horror way, and I hate saying simpleton kind of fashion like that, I think it would have been just a flat out number one film for me because I loved everything up to that point. And when it gets to the end, it kind of whimpered a little bit. Like Wailing, I think that was a cultural thing. I think there was a statement about Poland and its place in the EU and a lot of things that are above my pay grade when it comes to watching a horror film. But the parts that worked, man, the humor is what I walk away. Besides the really kind of creepy and scary moments, there's so much humor to this movie in the same way The Wailing that makes you just go, man, other cultures are so absurdist about their humor compared to America. Just like a lot of cultures, Australia and New Zealand are very sarcastic, you know. Every culture has their type of humor. And I just think this film is the biggest tragedy of the year for me, that this director will not make another film and that he didn't get to see his film get the praise and that he obviously was dealing with his own incredible demons. And it's, you know, it's always a shame that they can't get through that.
Yeah.
You know?
Wow.
But a beautiful movie.
Yeah. Becca, number three?
This one's going to come as a shock to you guys. Tale of Tales.
Oh.
Mm.
Yeah.
I'm dying to see it, and it looked like my kind of thing.
Seriously, and it is your type of thing, Elric. But it moves, cool. They use edits and things like that. Slam.
I like
edits. No, this one it struck me by surprise because I hadn't heard anything about it.
Yeah.
And I got a press copy in the mail one day, and so I'm opening my mail, and I'm like, and it's this picture of like Selma Hayek eating this giant heart on the front, and I was like, I don't know what this is, but fucking watching it tonight. There was a sea monster on the back. So I was like, okay, this is like made for me.
You talk to Marnie like that? Jeez. We're fucking watching this, Marnie.
We're watching this right now. Sea monster. She's at home watching Emmett Otter's Jug Band Christmas right now. I'm missing
that. Okay, I love that's been brought up twice.
I know.
We all love that thing.
No, I just got her the DVD and she was like, can I watch this tonight? And I was like, I'm not going to be here. Aww. But anyway, back to Tale of Tales. And it was just, maybe it was because I didn't know anything about it or it struck me by surprise, but I absolutely loved the screening of it. It's a little long, but you kind of just
anthology,
roll with
right?
it. It's an anthology, sort but of. They interconnect.
Okay. Is that what, I started to watch it the other night and I got as far as like seeing a sea creature, which I thought was amazing.
That's pretty close to the
beginning. It was very late at night and I realized that it was well over 2 hours
long. It's well over 2 hours long.
So I was like, all right, I'm going to have to pause this one and revisit because it seems like there's a lot going on.
There is. It's four or five different stories. And they are apparently all by this one author. And this is the other thing. A lot of times I will finish movies and I'll just be like, oh, that was a fun movie. Like, Don't Breathe. Oh, that was a fun movie. Mm-hmm. This one I was like, I must research this. And an hour later I was still like looking up who did the cinematography. And I wanted to know who did the art direction for it and who this particular actor was because I'd never heard of this
person
before.
You know who
loved this movie?
Brett Easton Ellis. He was saying there's one of only two movies this year that was worth seeing in the theater and that he just raved about.
I wish I had seen this.
Why are you laughing,
like millennials?
Yeah. Come on.
Oh, Brett Easton Ellis.
I'm with you on that. Oh, Brett Easton Ellis.
Comrade Snowflakes.
I wish I had seen this in the theater. And I will say, this one is loose horror. I think that Netflix or IMDb called it dark fantasy.
Okay. Mm. Is it on Netflix yet?
No, it isn't.
I'm looking forward to seeing it.
But I wish I had seen this one in the theater. It's beautiful.
Sold.
Ryan,
sold.
Number three.
My number three is Don't Breathe.
Nice.
I was immediately drawn to its kind of Walter Hill-esque meets Walter Hill meets Wes Craven nature. You know, it had a kind of a 70s grit.
Oh, yeah, People Under the Stairs vibe, yeah.
Yeah, and a People Under the Stairs vibe, and it was relentless, and it didn't pull back any punches, like you said.
Yeah,
you know, and the
twist. And it's so un-PC. I love a movie that says, fuck being PC. Fede, like, let's just have fun.
Look,
like,
I mean, the bottom line is Fede don't give a fuck.
Yeah, he doesn't care. Like,
and he backs it up, you know. He backs it up.
On with a t-shirt, Fede don't give a fuck. I think you just got your meme.
Fede, I'm going to send you his shirt for
Fede
Christmas.
Fede don't give a fuck. But he got fingered.
Jesus Christ. Elric. Clark, would you shut that down?
Stop it.
I liked it. I like that one.
No, but, you know, we've said everything that we wanted to say about Don't Breathe. I mean, it was just a visceral experience that, you know, kept the twist coming. I thought the basement sequence in which the protagonists were thrust into the dark and chased by a blind man, I thought it was excellently done. And it was just one that stuck with me as soon as it came up on iTunes last month.
Can I point out one major flaw in this movie? Now that I was reminded
one?
Of it, among the many, but the one that like my roommate wouldn't let go of when we were watching it is, so he's a blind dude, and blind people have a very strong sense of smell. Mm. So when he first comes downstairs and discovers them, and there's only one guy there, so he does not smell the girl, and we're like, wait a minute, there's a girl in the room, and girls smell really good. perfume, whatever.
Don't look at me, Rob.
I'm look at Becca.
I'm wearing vanilla lotion right now.
It may be a generalization.
He works in the.
I know it, but I mean,
dear Jane Levy, I'm going to tweet at her and be like, did you smell during the movie?
Look,
Rob
I'm not.
Sits next to me in the office
really
all day, and I do
point.
Tend to wear scented lotions all the time.
You mean to tell me when a girl walks by you in a hallway that you don't smell?
Well, if they want to smell, but she's breaking into the house, she might have purposely, like, dulled it down.
I'm not going to put on my wild berry perfume right
Clark,
now.
Clark, when you break into a house, what do you do?
Actually, you know what? Fun fact, the first thing Ryan ever said to me is, you smell good.
Boom. So there. Prove it. Prove it.
That's true.
So I'm not that crazy fucker.
Called out.
Called out.
I do have to say,
Ryan, when I used to co-host trivia with him, I don't think he wears it at the office, but when I used to co-host trivia with you, you always used to wear this cologne.
Oh, yeah.
It was like a step up from Axe body spray, though.
But
it was decent.
Guys, you're breaking into a house.
house.
It was good.
It was good. You aren't wearing perfume breaking into a house. Come on. And you know he's blind. No, wait, exactly. They knew he's blind.
By the way, I did look it up, and anarchic is the right word and the right pronunciation. Anarchic.
Yeah. Antarctic.
Are you done?
Yeah.
Like an old married couple. Are you done?
Yes.
Oh, yes. Soft pat on the back.
Honey, I'm done.
I thought only Elric and I fought like that.
Ryan's not going to tell me I smell good later.
Oh, man.
Okay, my number three is Train to Busan. We've already said most things. I just want to say to the listeners who haven't seen it yet and they've heard people talking about it or whatever, our audience was tweeting at us and tweeting at us like, have you seen Train to Busan? Have you seen it? Have you seen it? It's the best zombie movie in 10 years. And I was like, I don't care. I don't care if it's – I'm over zombies. Do not show me zombies right now. Like, it doesn't – and then they were relentless and they said, you have to see it. You have to see it. And I did. And I fucking loved it. And it's my third favorite movie.
Can I just ask one question? Is this number three?
Uh-huh.
So you just laid down your number three.
Aren't we? Isn't that what we're on?
Yeah, this is number three, but I remember 3 years ago you didn't lay down your three. So I got a little surprise for you.
Oh, Jesus.
Oh, no.
Oh God. Elric's up.
Girl, chocolate yes! for you.
So Elric, because you guys are not here, Elric dropped his headphones and then he unveiled a Shockwave shirt. For Clark Wolf.
I really did.
Because that's what we do when it's Christmas, Shockwave stuff.
Yeah.
Planning this for 2 weeks.
Man, if only I had known, I would have had a number three years ago.
And also, don't be upset. It says XL, but these sizes are tiny.
This looks like
they're all really tight.
This looks like it will fit me.
And Elric broke the headphones.
He was so excited. It was like dropping the mic, except dropping the headphones.
You just threw those.
I was going to give you at number six, but then he corrected me.
There you go.
Out of control.
But yeah, so to the audience listening, even if you're kind of over zombies or whatever the case may be, like I was, I'm so glad that I actually watched this movie. Yeah. So that's my recommendation.
Beautiful. Number two.
Number two. It's getting real.
Conjuring 2.
Wait, before you even do number two,
I did it. I threw it down.
No, I mean, but did anyone have any problem between their one and two going, fluctuating? Or was that pretty good?
A little bit.
I fluctuated.
I did. Yeah.
Okay, so I'm curious. Okay.
Conjuring 2?
Yeah.
No, I can't.
That's like one of my mentions.
Please, tell us why.
Oh, Conjuring 2 was your number two? Oh, damn. Okay, here we go.
One more.
Oh, shit. I missed the whole thing.
I thought, you know, look, it's funny because people are like, well, do you like one or two better? I think they're both equally kind of good. I mean, one is maybe a tiny bit better as a movie.
Yeah.
But as far as sequels go, it's like James directed the fuck out of that movie.
Yeah. It's like a freight train. Every five minutes there's a scare, and it's a well-executed scare. The ambition
and how he executed directing it. There's so many incredible shots and stuff. But again, and we've talked about it when the movie came out. To me, it's more about the character relationship between the Warrens. The cinematic version of the Warrens is so much stronger in the second movie because we already know them at that point. You know, like in the first movie, the family dynamic is stronger as opposed to the Warren relationship. And in part two, I felt the opposite. The family thing is kind of the weak part, although I do like that story and I think it's scary. And what I really loved was the Warrens. And I mean, it has one of my favorite scenes of any movie this year, which is, you know, when Patrick Wilson sings an Elvis song to them and they get a moment of peace.
Well, and also the painting scene.
The painting scene was intense.
Scary.
You know, so I mean, look, in terms of craft, it's got all the scares. Yeah. It's just a great popcorn horror movie. And I mean, I love the first movie. I think James is at the top of his game and I freaking love it. And when I look back, I'm like, yeah, it's Conjuring 2.
The only criticism of that movie you could even really have is that it's overstuffed. It's like it's like you start with Amityville, which is awesome, and then you have the British storyline, then you have the American storyline, and then they come together and you're like, okay, that's a love story.
Yeah, and it was, but all the same time with all these storylines, it was focusing on the Warrens and for me. It felt a little full.
Yeah.
But the scares were awesome.
Yeah. All right. Elric, number two.
Number two, it could have easily been my number one. It was my one of my favorite watching in a theater horror movies. And when I say horror, I mean it's like the horror movie, and that's The Autopsy of Jane Doe. I'd say it's my favorite screening of the year. Becca was there as well. We didn't even sit near each other, and we had the exact kind of same.
I waved at you a couple times.
Yeah, same reaction. It gives me that thing. It's not the kind of horror film I seek to make myself, and that I get like, oh, I love that art house, the kind of things you guys usually think I love.
But I love the ride. No, I just loved like giving myself over to a story that kept surprising me in really interesting ways. Aesthetically, it was beautifully made. I haven't seen Trollhunter, so I didn't really know what the guy could do or not. But I think the two actors were
you
perfectly.
Seen Trollhunter?
No, I've never seen Trollhunter.
It's on Netflix.
I know. I might do it as a Christmas.
We'll have to catch up.
Yeah,
because I haven't seen it either.
I couldn't finish Trollhunter.
Okay.
Oh, wow.
I got a little bored.
Okay. Well, it's found footage, which makes it was a little harder for me to get through.
But
as well.
there's a scene where Hannibal Lecter. says, do you like it? Looks quite black in moonlight. But there's a scene.
Brian Cox,
yeah. From Manhunter. There's a sequence in him where your scientist character says something that scientists never say in movies. And it brought the freaking, that's all I'm going to say so you see it, but it brought the house down. I remember people laughing their asses off because, you know, scientists are always like, well, there's a logical explanation to everything. But when you run out of logical and the guy's just like, yeah, no, let's just do this. It was so entertaining.
Yeah.
And I love this movie. I can't wait to watch it again. That's one of those films I want to watch right now.
Yeah, I ended up watching it a second time.
Oh, cool.
And I will say on the second viewing, there was something missing, and I think that it was that theatrical screening. The second time I was able to say it's better directed than it is a script.
Third act, she's right, dead right. That, there is, it becomes a little more of a
Yeah, but that fucking Shark
lurking.
In the Shallows, guys, that really sucks. that Shark in the Shallows.
The Little Mermaid.
Shallows is on my list, man.
So you're number two.
But yeah, my number two is also Autopsy of Jane
Doe.
Just Wonder minutes twins. Ago, I was telling you to sit the fuck down, and now we're friends and high-fiving. I love it.
Yeah.
This
no,
is the beauty of the show.
We had a lot in sync, Elric. Like, it was always like, you know, we
it's
had
family,
a lot
baby.
Going
it's family.
Back and forth.
I said Elric before, we're a lot more in sync these nowadays
than
we were maybe when we first started, which is kind of weird.
Yeah, Autopsy of Jane Doe, I hadn't heard anything about that, and I went to one of the screenings at Beyond Fest, and I hadn't planned to come see Autopsy of Jane Doe because I, for some reason, was picturing it like Saw 4. I was like, oh, it's just going to be an autopsy and like a display of grossness.
Well, I remember the photo, I don't think any of us really wanted to see it. And it wasn't until word came from how good the fantastic, and
it
everyone said, it's the film. And they moved it to the big theater. And then all of us went.
That's when all of us went. So I was in Beyond the Wall. Yeah, I was in the screening of Beyond the Wall at Beyond Fest. And Spencer came in and was like, okay, I know you guys are here for this, but I have to tell you, you need to go see Autopsy of Jane Doe. It's the greatest movie that we are showing here. You cannot miss this. Be there. And I was like, okay, I'll go. And I did. And I knew nothing about it and absolutely loved it. And it was, it was by far my best screening of the year.
Cool.
Ryan, number two.
Ryan was not a fan.
No. Autopsy, it just didn't make my top 10. I enjoyed it, but I didn't.
You've seen it once, though, right?
I've seen it once.
Yeah, I'll be curious.
No, I'm going to revisit during the holiday break. Yeah, I want to see it with you guys.
And when does that? 21st? 21st. Okay.
It'll be out by the time this
Yeah, cool, cool.
My number two is The Witch. Mm-hmm. Now, last year, if you'd asked me what my number one of 2016 was probably going to be, it would probably be The Witch.
Mm. Yeah.
But it got trumped by my number one. Mostly because my number – I'll talk about my number one in a second. But The Witch, I just think, is a great atmosphere piece. And, you know, Clark, I think you hit it right on the head with a couple of the themes that were going on. But I just thought it – at the time I saw it, which is now 2 years ago at Sundance, I think, you know, 2 years later, rewatching it, I think it still has the same power in its kind of poetry, its visual poetry. Like you said, Robert Eggers is definitely going to be somebody to watch.
Have you met him? Because I don't know many people who know him. He seems kind of...
Briefly exchanged words. But all the performances are fantastic. Okay. Anya Taylor-Joy is great. Harvey Scrimshaw, who plays Caleb. I mean, that kid is acting his lungs out when he's starting to, like, become part of the whatever he's becoming part
scary.
Of. Really, really scary stuff. But, you know, it's a really potent tale about the unknown. You know, it's the, you know, when John Carpenter talks about the sitting around a campfire and talking about the other out in the darkness, this is that movie. It is going out into the wilderness and not knowing what's out there.
And that theme, that idea of somebody will call you something enough times and you're not that thing. And you keep defending yourself, and eventually you're I might as well be the fucking thing.
And that's teenage angst, isn't it?
Yeah.
I mean, like, Anya Taylor-Joy is just a teenage girl in this movie, you know? And what is... You know, and a teenage girl is going through a lot. And when you're going, hey, you're this, you know, that's
it almost doubles for like modern slut shaming or something where you call somebody that enough, they might as well just be the thing because otherwise they're not having the fun of what you're calling them anyway.
Right.
I mean, it's kind of interesting. Yeah.
Right.
And I think what's interesting is it's
coming to evil.
Well, yeah, it's dressed up as a traditional historic piece, but I do think it's really modern.
Yeah.
And I need to watch it again now, you know, with everything going on. But.
Mm-hmm.
Good choice.
Yep.
My number two was my favorite thing I saw at Fantastic Fest this year. Paul Verhoeven's L.
Oh, I heard a lot
about fucking
this.
Love
Can
L.
I tell you one thing?
Has that come out yet?
Yes.
I watched that movie
Yes.
exactly 2.5 hours ago, and that's why I was late coming here, and it is probably going to be tied for my favorite film of the year.
Wow.
Of all films.
Wow. Yeah.
And I'm actually glad you're putting it on a horror list, even though I wouldn't, but also it's just too fresh. I love that movie.
So here's why I'm – well, I can't say – here's the funny
part. I call
it
this, rape, revenge, and quote marks, big quote marks, rape, revenge film.
I wish that – Let's have it off mic conversation.
Okay, yeah, yeah, wait.
Because I can't explain why I think it belongs on a horror list without really getting into nitty gritty. But what I would say is that I feel like you can choose to take this movie at face value. You can choose to see what, you know, believe exactly what they're showing you. But you can also choose to read between the lines. And I think if you do, there is a lot more darkness to her character than
right,
perhaps.
Right, tied into her backstory, perhaps.
Yep.
Yeah.
And also, so the film starts with, I will say this, because this is, I don't think.
Because I don't think many people at this stage know anything.
Yeah.
This is still pretty new on the circuit, too.
Well, it's funny, too, because when I saw this movie at Fantastic Fest, my biggest comment was, yeah, America is not going to like this movie.
Right.
This is America's too prude.
And yet
for
this
they
are
movie.
Going for the performance. Like, yes, she might even get an Oscar nod, which she deserves.
She hasn't gotten one yet. Yeah. I mean, how is, and
Piano Teacher is off the charts crazy performance by her. So this is even better than that, which
yeah,
blew my mind.
She's great. And, you know, I think that this is the French entry into the Academy Awards, yeah, for best foreign film, and you know, I don't know if it has a shot or not, but I also loved seeing an older woman and the complexity of an older woman and a lifetime, and it didn't
older woman's sexual desires too, something we forget all that exists.
Absolutely. And yes, and the sexuality is a very big part of this. I mean, it is a Paul Verhoeven film. I mean, I don't see how you can separate the two, but at the same time, to me as an audience member, there was so much more than the sexuality going on to this movie, yet that is front and center, and I don't deny it, and I don't say, oh yeah, let's not pay attention to that, like, it is there, but there just was, this was a complicated woman, and it felt very exciting for me to see this type of character put up on screen. And once again, if you know, get into a spoilery conversation, I think there's a lot
more
going on.
Yeah, there's a whole other thing, and it hasn't fully processed, but I totally know what you're talking about, and I hope it's that. This movie's a great movie. And the thing is, Paul Verhoeven is literally, if you look at his career, he is maybe the most versatile fucking director on the planet, yeah, for making a – because this movie is really subtle in some ways and super over the top in
yes,
some of its action. Then you go to Showgirls, RoboCop, Total Recall. This guy is a beast. And the saddest thing is he hasn't made a film for maybe over a decade. And he wrote a freaking huge, like, 4-book biography on Jesus Christ before making this movie. And then when you watch this movie, you're going to go, that guy wrote a book about Jesus? This is all about fantasy and rape and serial killers. And I mean,
and you know, you said it about The Invitation, that it's a movie for adults. The Invitation is a movie for adults. And I feel like Elle is a movie for adults. This is not something that, you know, you have to really think about it and be in it, but
This film wouldn't, as you said about American audiences, this film wouldn't get made here.
No.
And it wouldn't get made. It would have to win an Oscar, and then they would go, oh, we could give it to Laura Linney now.
Right.
But it couldn't have been made here. And it's, I think she might actually, well, Jackie will probably win the Oscar but for actress, but I think she has a very good shot of being nominated, and I think at least then people will watch this.
Yeah.
But I'm totally with you, and I'm so glad I just watched it on my way here, because I've been wanting to. You know, look, Paul Verhoeven, man, that's a guy we should all be lining up for a new movie by that guy. Oh, RoboCop is the best movie. You know, it's just a masterpiece. I love RoboCop.
Yes. All right, this is it.
Holy.
Oh, boy.
Number one to everybody. Yeah. Everybody ready?
Uh-oh.
All right.
I'm more than ready.
My number one is Train to Busan.
Oh.
And, you know, again, when it comes to your number one. It was, are you okay, Ryan? Stretching?
I'm surprised.
Old man,
all right. No. You hit the tone of when it slowed down, but you actually hit it and like, you went, whoa. just like the Badgers.
No, there's nothing to be surprised about. First of all, I mean, everybody knows that's been listening to both shows. I love South Korean cinema. I think some of the stuff they're doing there is some of the – they're taking chances that you just never see in American cinema. So it's got that going for it. But, you know, I saw this on the big screen. I went with one of my best friends, and it was a packed audience. And, again, like Clark said, I'm like, zombies, done. I don't care. But because it was a Korean twist on, I was like, all right, well, let's see. And I was blown away by the zombie side of things. I was blown away by the characters. And I'm not ashamed to say that, there were scenes I jumped. I had a few – maybe tears in my eye at some point. It's everything I love about going to a movie. It's all the emotions laid out, and I feel like I got my money's worth. And when I think about, to me, what was the best horror ride in the theater, it was this. I loved it. And I will probably revisit a lot. And I also hope they don't remake it, even though I know they will.
And whether they're doing a sequel right now? And
well, apparently there's an animated prequel that exists we spoke about. Did you know that? Yeah, I'll look it up while we go on. But because this is the director's first narrative feature. But apparently he comes from a world of anime, and he made an anime before this that is a prequel to this. So, it's my favorite horror movie of the year. And I think I think everyone should check it out.
Nice.
I'm just going to lead off with mine. This is my favorite film of the year, favorite horror film, favorite film. RIP to one of the most talented actors of this generation, Anton Yelchin. Green Room, I think, it's the only film this year, and I won't lie, that I was thinking about not putting on because I wanted to fit in the indie, and I knew I was going to be raving about it as just my favorite film, not horror. But it's the only film that I went to by myself opening that day. It was middle of the day. I knew it just opened. I went down, and I literally unconsciously had chewed all my fingernails, and I've never done that in a movie. Because I was just like in it. I was just like, oh, fuck, what's going to happen? And I remember tweeting the night before the election. I was tweeting thinking I was being clever as shit when Hillary was going to win. I'm like, when Hillary wins, she should just play Nazi punks, fuck off, something like that. And then next day, I was just like, oh.
Oh, my God.
I was like, oh, damn. I think this movie,
stop being political.
Yeah, exactly. Saulnier, my favorite working director right now of a modern director. Yes. Just in two films, has made my two favorite films of both years.
Yeah, Blue Ruin, man.
Blue Ruin was my favorite film of that year. This is an improvement. This is a better movie. The cast, and it's not just Anton Yelchin who's great. It's everyone as a group, a band, and I was never a metal kid at all, like a lot of horror people were. I was only into punk, like when I was young. So, and I wasn't a punk person going to shows. I just liked punk, and everything about this movie worked for me. I've only seen it once, but it left me tense as fuck. And it's horror in the same token as a home invasion movie would be hard, just like Don't Breathe. Really, Don't Breathe and this actually have a lot of similarities in terms of the way you're feeling.
Yeah.
But I think Green Room, I care so much more about the people in that film. I really care about them. With the bassist, the girl, and I just, you know, she's, I love
Imogen.
That
Imogen Poots.
Yeah,
is
I loved her in it.
Awesome.
Man. Like, oh my God. And Macon, it's nice to see Macon. You know, he's got a smaller role in this one, but it makes me realize this is a team to watch. And I can't say enough about this movie. I got to buy it. I haven't owned it yet, but.
All righty. Becca, number one.
Number one, 10 Cloverfield Lane.
Oh!
Yeah. Nice.
Whoa!
Yeah, this one was definitely, and I mean, it's not the best, made film of the year, and it's
pretty well made.
Pretty
well made.
It's definitely the one that, I was with it the entire time.
Cool.
It was, the one that from the start to finish, even when it twisted to, the larger scope at the end, I was like, oh, this is, it's exactly what I wanted it to do. I love the movie.
It's a good movie.
Damn. Well,
Ryan, it's you.
I wonder if any of them are going to be.
I'm dropping a title that no one has mentioned here.
It's in my mentions.
Well, it's not in your top 10.
Yeah.
Number one for me is Under the Shadow. Baba Kanvari's directorial debut about a mother and daughter in a tenement in Tehran during the 80s, during wartime. Father is away on the front lines. And during this time of war, something has taken root inside their apartment complex.
And it's not Jane Fonda.
And it's not Jane Fonda.
I loved all the stuff with her.
But this is out. Where can we see this? Because
it's on Amazon. It's on VOD.
It's on Amazon. It's on iTunes.
It's a really good movie.
It's fantastic, tightly wound, super dramatic horror film.
Mm-hmm. A lot like Ouija 2 in terms of the jumps. They're very similar jumps.
In the most classic sense. And I saw this in a theater really early on, and it was a film that made me jump twice, and I am really hard to get. Mm-hmm. But there was one moment that I just leapt out of my seat, and I was like, you got me.
Yeah.
This is great. Great performance by, I'm going to mispronounce your name, I'm sorry, Narges Rashidi. I think she did fantastic work. I thought the little girl was great. And just in terms of a directorial debut, something that's kind of equal parts art house and commercial, Babak delivered the goods. I thought it was fantastic.
I feel like that one and Monster were both ones that are just so close. They could have been anywhere on my list.
Thematically, yeah.
Yeah, and, but on my list, I could have. I love either in any other year. They could have both been on my list. I love both films. Yeah. They just didn't make it, but that's a good, great pick.
Mine is also not one that you all have said.
Oh, shit. I was expecting something similar.
And also, I just want to say that for the people that really hate this movie, I'm not trying to convince you otherwise. But I really, really...
Lords of Salem?
...dig this movie. It is Lords of Salem for the third year in a row.
You are on a roll, lady.
Yeah, it is my number one, number two, number three. No, my number one is The Neon Demon.
Oh!
Wow!
I really
Dick Grinnard is loving this. That's his number one, I think.
Is it?
Yeah.
I really like The Neon Demon. Now I saw this. Okay, so the first time I saw The Neon Demon was in a press screening, surrounded by journalistic dudes. Uh-huh. It was very interesting to watch them watch this movie, and I got a kick out of it. I thought it was funny. I thought it was sad. I thought it was real. I thought it was authentic. I thought it was scary. I thought it was a lot of different things. Thought some of it was ridiculous, but I thought it was hypnotic. And then the second time I saw it was at the premiere. Half of the people in the audience really got the movie. The other half were models and did not get the movie, which also is kind of funny to me. And then the third time I saw it was before I did a Q&A with Nick and Cliff Martinez.
Mm-hmm.
And that audience also on a Sunday afternoon, some of them really liked it and some of them really didn't. But every time I watched it, I was like, yeah, I really like this. Mm. And I liked it more and more. Mm. And, you know, I will say this, you know, as a woman living in Los Angeles who is both in front of the camera and behind the camera, I feel like I felt like all those women at some point in the almost 10 years that I have lived in Los Angeles. And don't get me wrong, I love LA. I love it here. But I identified with all of them in little ways. And I have to say, I thought Elle Fanning was very good. But the other two gals... I loved their performances. I thought they were so good.
See, for me, they were the, I mean, no, they did play those that kind of role, but I guess for me, the idea of this movie was so obvious that I felt like I didn't need to do any work in the movie because it was all, but I mean, the aesthetic's gorgeous.
Yeah,
it was gorgeous,
it was pretty,
and sounds good.
But there wasn't anything to figure out.
Yes.
But I will say, I did relate to like the being in LA as a woman thing. In my very first apartment I had here in Los Angeles, we had a gym.
Yeah, Keanu Reeves is your...
I identified with Keanu. Knives in woman's mouth late at night.
We had a treadmill, and there was a model who lived next door to me, and every single morning she would go down and walk on the treadmill in these fucking enormous heels. And she would walk on the treadmill in heels, and it was just one of these things like, where the hell am I that this is happening?
It is a little science fiction-y. Yeah. It's kind of cool.
I think Abby Lee, who played Sarah, who played the gal... So if you've seen Neon Demon, she's the one who goes to the casting alongside Elle Fanning and gets passed over for her, and they have that confrontation in the bathroom. I thought she fucking killed it. I thought she was so good, and I felt for her, and I don't know. I just love Neon Demon.
did you like Only God Forgives? Or didn't
I've never seen it.
Okay, yeah.
But
I was curious.
I'm so glad you said that, though, because the way I explain it, and you guys, again, don't have to agree with me, but this is how I was able to think about it. So I didn't love Drive. Like, I saw Drive, and I was like, cool, okay. And then I saw Neon Demon, and I feel like if Drive is a look at male violence, I think Neon Demon is a look at female violence. Mm-hmm. And I like that. I think it's really cool.
Valhalla is Viking violence.
Right, I don't know about any of that.
I will say, because we're about to segue into our favorite, like, other sections, but one of my favorite performances of the whole year, even though Neon Demon did not completely work, and I am going to see it again, Jenna Malone in that movie is like one of my favorite things of the year. Jenna Malone in anything right now, is she's killing it. Anytime she appears in a movie, I'm like, oh my God. But in that film, my favorite horror moment of the year was a necrophilia scene, because I am sitting in a theater packed in a multiplex, and I looked around going, all these motherfuckers are watching necrophilia right now, and this is the coolest thing I've ever seen. Like, it has no spoiler, it's not even connected to the movie, but we are watching a woman make out with a corpse, and I'm in. So anyway.
Amongst other things.
I am so glad that we had that kind of versatility in our top five. I got to say, that is amazing that there wasn't a single repeat in our number ones.
Nope.
What is the chance of that? That is a good list.
That's pretty cool.
So what are the mentions?
Well done, guys. Well done.
Like, I have to give a shout out, even though it did not make my top 10 list. I kind of really liked The Boy.
I have that too.
Wait, which one?
With the doll.
The doll. Right?
The doll. No spoilers because I haven't seen it yet, but I want to.
That's in my runner-ups too. I had fun with it.
It was just another one of these where I was like, it felt kind of sleazy, especially when it came to the twist at the end. I was like, oh, this just got weird, but I really kind of liked
it. Both boys. I wish the other boy
came out last year, right?
The grittier one, yeah.
The Rainn Wilson.
I love that one.
Oh, I think so too.
Go watch it.
I mean, yeah, only Friends movie I put on there because it's always hard with Friends, you know, where to place, but I do think Beyond the Gates is a film that was so fun. Mm-hmm. It's not in my top 10, mostly because of my taste, the kind of movies I like.
Yeah.
But I really think he did a great job with such a small film. And I really enjoyed that and all the ones we've already talked about.
I want to throw a little love to Tickled, which is a documentary.
New Zealand documentary.
I tried watching that and couldn't make it through. That was painful.
Why? Because it's painful because it made you feel gross?
It just made me, icky.
It made you feel icky,
really
as
icky.
As it should. Because this movie is really, really cringeworthy, man. Like, it is disgusting and weird. And not disgusting overtly, like where you're seeing gross stuff. It just makes you feel very, very, well, as Becca said, icky.
Icky, because I had to turn it off.
It's about this guy who uncovers this underground ring of video makers that, like, basically just put videos out into the world of guys getting tickled. And it turns out if you try to get out of this underground ring, the person who is producing these videos comes after you in a really bad way. They go after your family. They try to smear your name in public. They do all of these things. And it's about this one journalist who wants to face off with the person who is funding all these weird videos. Yeah. And, of course, naturally the person starts to fire back at them. And it's literally just kind of like this giant war being played out. And and there's a lot of revelations. I'll just say that.
It doesn't sound like a documentary. It sounds like a real movie.
That's the thing. I mean, it was funny because I didn't know what to expect. I was like, kind of an underground tickling ring movie. Oh, this is really weird.
But they feel like snuff films.
There's something very raw about them because it's a mattress in a stark white room and just a bunch of dudes tickling each other. And then it just kind of unfolds from there. But I'll tell you guys, it is a journey. It's a real fucking journey. And it's on all the VOD services. And I love the poster because it's a picture of a feather. But in the feather and like the little flaps is this evil little face. And you can't see it. If you just look at it the right way, you see it. But I was like, man.
Yeah.
But it's the closest thing to a scary movie as you're
It plays get. Like a horror film. Yeah. It really does. Yeah.
Let's throw out categories, like best horror experience, and we'll just throw them around. And if you want to add anything you've missed along the way, we can.
Yeah, sure. Well, my only runner-up to follow up on the icky feeling of a movie is Emily, which came out earlier this year, which is the babysitter movie.
Oh, I didn't see that one.
It was, it's just one of those movies. I didn't love it, but it's definitely one
Another
that makes
evil
you
babysitter
feel...
Movie.
Very awkward, and I definitely want to mention They Look Like People, which I guess technically maybe hit the festival circuit late last year, but really this was one of those little indie movies that popped up on Netflix this year, and everybody started talking about it, including me and Elric.
And I wanted it to be my number 10, so
was,
I just thought that would be the perfect number 10 movie.
It was so close to being in my top 10 as well, but it's a great little ambitious movie. So that was in there. What categories? Do you want to do TV really quick?
Yeah.
Whatever you want.
Let's jump in.
What
do you got?
I was just going to fire off really quick some of the festival films I saw this year that haven't come out, but you should be looking forward to next year.
So we're going to Fay Festival films that weren't eligible.
Basically, if you could, we weren't allowing you to talk about it tonight, even though that might have been your number one for a week.
Right. Well, I mean, my top six that I saw this year, Raw, which you probably heard a lot about.
Raw is awesome.
It's a cannibal film that you'll be seeing hit theaters, I believe, in March.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Beware the Slender Man, which is the HBO documentary about the two girls that attempted to murder their best friend in the name of Slender Man. Really dark, depressing, somber, fascinating look at hysteria and mental illness and, you know, the kind of effects that the internet can have on young people.
Not as much about creepypastas, which I think people are looking forward to. But yeah, it's like a true crime thing.
Yeah. And number three, A Dark Song, which I've mentioned on the podcast before. Sweet, Sweet Lonely Girl, another one. The Lure, which is a...
Mermaid?
Scandinavian?
It's a...
Polish?
I'm sorry.
Polish.
Polish.
Yeah.
little take on Little Mermaid.
Does it have any sharks? No sharks.
It's a musical, and it's about these two mermaids that go up on land. They become nightclub acts. It's a musical. It's fucking insane.
Yeah, they're in like, and it's not like a musical makes it sound like there's dancing and pretty costumes. It's much more like a punk band.
Yeah, that was so long.
I couldn't see it at Fantastic.
It plays
Fest.
And they're not like
they're pretty women. But when they turn into mermaids, they're not like, you know, they don't have these Daryl Hannah fishtails. They're fucking coelacanths.
Yeah. Okay.
Like they have these gnarly black tails that are just like muddy and gross looking. And then finally is wasn't on the festival scene, but it almost came out this year. And then they delayed it to next year is 47 Meters Down, which is another shark film that stars Mandy Moore as
a young woman trapped at the bottom of the ocean.
With sharks, and I'm not going to go further than that, but there was a moment in this film in which I screamed at the screen because it is my nightmare.
Did it not come out on VOD?
No, I thought it did. No,
it
did not. They pulled it because then they finally got a theatrical release for it.
So when does 47 Meters Down come out?
I think it comes out in March. Okay. I think.
Well, this would be the second straight year February would have been my number one film. and it's still not out, so I'm struggling.
Didn't The Black Coat's Daughter already come out? Isn't it on VOD?
No, it got delayed for next year.
Are you serious?
And in England, it's been on Netflix. In England, it's been on Netflix. So I still got to rewatch it, but hopefully next year it will be on my fucking list. That's the only one I think.
Yeah, mine, I have three of them. Girl with All the Gifts, which I saw, and you and I have had a conversation.
Yeah.
Just absolutely fantastic film. Where is it from?
England,
yeah. Just absolutely fantastic. Kind of, it's a zombie film, but not a zombie film.
Yeah.
Lore, I also put on my list. For me, it played out like 19 music videos strung together, but in that regard, it was really fun to watch. And I also really liked We Are the Flesh, which is weird to say because I don't think you really like We Are the Flesh. But it was definitely one of my most interesting films of the year because it gave me a lot to talk about with that one, just because there's so much going on. And it's one of the few films that I watched this year where 4 days later I was still like, oh, I see what they did there. And I don't know, because during the movie, it's an extreme movie.
Isn't Arrow already put that out?
No, it's coming out in the UK.
It's coming out January. I just got the email today. It's coming out in January. I can describe it as it's post-apocalyptic. This weird guy lives in kind of an abandoned warehouse. These two kids show up looking for food. He says, I'll feed you if you help me build my womb out of cardboard. And they literally start building a womb.
Okay.
And then it just kind of gets even weirder. And I ended up watching this one. I probably wouldn't have watched it otherwise, but I arrived at Fantasia. I got to the screening room and Ryan looked at me and he was like, what are you watching? And I don't know. I said something. And he goes, you should check out We Are the Flesh. It's really weird. You might like it. And so I started watching it, and like 10 minutes later, I mean, it's pornographic.
Yeah.
And so you're watching it in a room with all of these other critics, and
it's full frontal and penetration. Yeah,
it's everything.
And like 2 minutes later, there's like full penetration on my screen, and I'm like, is anyone watching me watch this? Because you're in a room full of people.
Expand on that part.
You said it's double penetration.
What else is it?
She's not exaggerating. Really? This movie goes for it. And I just want to echo what you said. I don't know if I would say I liked it.
Yeah, I don't think you can say like it.
But I couldn't stop thinking about it.
Yeah.
And also, I think the director of that movie is a fucking visionary.
Yes.
Like, whoever this is knows exactly what the fuck he's doing.
It's a she.
Are you serious?
I am dead serious. No, and that is exactly
it. Just blew my mind.
The female who made this movie. Are you sure?
No, he's just looking.
I'm pretty sure. Okay, now I'm intrigued.
Yeah, let's
double
check.
I, for some reason, thought this was a female director.
Right, well,
so, Churik, look this up.
No one can see these yet.
But
we're just giving a tease. What you're going to see next year.
Girl with All the Gifts was on mine, but also Colossal. Nacho Vidal.
Oh, it is a guy. Dude.
I thought it was a dude.
Oh,
I thought it was.
Man.
What's his name?
I love it.
Emiliano.
Mm-hmm. Oh, but anyway, Colossal.
Yeah, his name is Emiliano Minter.
Yeah. I thought I looked it up and I remembered it as a man.
Still, I will say, whoever this guy is, he went in knowing 110% what he was doing
from the very beginning.
It's about as close as you can get. If you ever looked at Barlow's depictions of hell, He's a paint. You know, he does like a lot of paintings. It's the closest you're going to get to seeing that kind of craziness. I mean, because these people are basically created their own hell. It's
but it's supposed to be a heaven too.
Yeah,
and a room and
so,
a womb.
Clark, I remember because we got your early emails. Would the girl with the gifts have been your number one this year? If you could have,
it would have been in my top five. Okay. Faux show, big time.
Yeah, it would have been in my top 10.
I really, really like that one. But Colossal, I wanted to say because I know it got a little bit of a weird mixed reaction at TIFF, and then when you hear the premise of like Jason Sudeikis and Anne Hathaway, you kind of go, yeah, okay, whatever. I just really loved Colossal. I think it's really good. So keep your eye out. That one I think is also March.
Great nacho film. I love Time Crimes. It's great.
And you know what?
Extraterrestrial's good as well.
I have never seen any of his other movies.
Okay.
So I went in completely like, you know, completely clean and fresh in that one, and I just really loved it. So,
let's do a more quick
yeah,
fire.
Let's just shoot some stuff
out. What was your favorite horror experience that you had, whether it's a maze or anything?
Satanic Panic Escape Room.
Okay, cool.
Where is that at?
That was at Fantastic Fest, Bottleneck Immersive, who, I mean, that was, I hate escape
that was
rooms.
Fantastic.
I fucking loved. Cool. It was a blast. So Bottleneck Immersive, look them up and go see all their things and do all their things.
Yeah.
I think me and Ryan are probably going to be the same.
It's John Carpenter.
Yep.
Seeing John Carpenter, I mean, like...
Live.
Yeah, seeing John Carpenter play live, I mean, I saw him a couple times, and it's just like, man, religion. It's total religion.
I loved seeing John Carpenter live, but you know what I like more than that? Taking my pants off in front of some stranger.
Whoa.
The tension experience was my number one, because whoever that blonde lady is who I had to get naked in front of...
Yeah, you know what? I met her,
that was
and
weird.
She was like, that was the worst experience of my life, is seeing Elmer Cain. No, I'm kidding.
it wouldn't surprise me. I'm comfortable enough to be okay with that. But it was a great horror experience, and I don't think Darren can ever make a movie that's on par with the crazy experience that thing
that
was.
Is the attention. He's doing
really
a new version of it called Lust.
Yeah, okay. Here's the problem, Bowsman. Listen up. If you call something Lust, you just counted out every married guy cannot come to your fucking thing now. When it was called something scary, we can all go and you can have some erotic experience. You call it Lust, I'm not even leaving the house. Thanks a lot.
All right, what else did you have?
Oh, my viewing experience.
Not viewing experience. Like just things that you did.
Just experience.
Maze, anything.
I got to say, it was, I had this like grand cathartic realization while sitting in the screening room at Fantasia. And it was just like, I'd watched like four films in a row and I was sitting there and I was just like, I think I can fit in one more today. And I was really excited. And I was just like, this is what I'm meant to be doing because I'm so excited to watch one more film.
I kind of like that because you're kind of the opposite of what Clark had said earlier. Sometimes you see too many horror films and you go, what the fuck am I doing right now? But you're saying the opposite. You get to reach a saturation point where instead you went the other way and you went, you know what? I want more. Mm-hmm. I'm in.
And it definitely, it showed me that I still, no matter what the horror film is going into it, I still get that same kind of anticipatory excitement that you would get if you're standing in line for a roller coaster.
Yeah.
And I get that for every single one. And that's probably like some form of deep-rooted addiction, but that's okay.
Well, it's another thing that if you've never been to a fest and seen a film in a fest, you'll never know that feeling. But that is a special way to see a horror film. If you see it before everyone else knows about it and you see it in that fresh way, it is a different experience.
Yeah.
Just like what Rob often and Ryan probably talked about when they went to conventions when they're young and saw trailers.
Yeah.
I never had that experience, but I love that feeling.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I have to say, conventions are also a big one. Like Scare LA was awesome this year. Phoenix Comic Con is always a trip.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, there were some great cons.
All right, let's do quick fire. Favorite Blu-ray release? Ryan.
I'm going to reach for the Hellraiser Scarlet Box.
Wow. Just freshly released.
Freshly released.
Released here in the U.S.
Yeah. And I actually had a look at the UK box set really early on because that was released first. And the transfers look great, you know, there's tons of bonus features, and it just collects the best Hellraiser movies in one really beautiful box. I mean, I don't know if you guys have seen it.
Not yet.
But the packaging is amazing. It comes with all sorts of extras. It comes with a booklet. And just in terms of just a great presentation. There have been a lot of great presentations this year, but I like big, bulky boxes that sit on my shelf that have giant pinheads on them. So,
any other Blu-rays?
Yeah, for me, I have a bunch that I'm going to write about on the site, but if I had to pick one, it's going to be Scream Factory's The Thing. Mm. I think it's probably one of the most definitive
I can't wait to get it.
And best possible releases of the year by far.
Oh. I liked, you go, Becca.
The Stuff from Arrow.
Oh, yes,
that
good job.
Was that's awesome. They did a really great job with that
and
one.
And right now, they're having a crazy sale. It's like $15 in Diabolic.
Yeah,
like
yeah,
crazy
Diabolic
cheap.
DVD until the end of the year.
I have one more. Valley of the Dolls from Criterion. Beyond the Valley of the Dolls, which is an unassuming horror film because it goes totally slasher at the end.
It is. I'm going with one that we're actually featured on, but that wasn't why. It's so full of stuff.
Oh,
that
I know what
Blue
you're
Sunshine.
Yeah.
The Blue Sunshine disc is crazy, and it comes with tabs of acid and all sorts of just crazy stuff. I loved it, but also that I just got it in the mail 2 days ago, and I can't wait to dive. My favorite thing that came out is the fact that Phantasm's remastered and on a Blu-ray the way it should be. It's such a deserving movie that makes me happy.
Cool. Clark, did you have one?
Nope.
All right.
Favorite horror discovery? Or soundtrack. Let's do soundtrack.
Yeah, soundtrack.
Favorite soundtrack can be from this year, any year.
Beyond the Walls.
Okay.
It's the one that is now on Shudder. It's great French tones, but then it's this classical music throughout, and I absolutely love the soundtrack on that one.
I got two. I mean, I was really enamored by Stranger Things. I mean, I both bought albums, and then I was really happy to see that Waxwork released the Salem's Lot soundtrack. One of my favorite kind
Another
of
great
like, yeah, it just really takes me back. Some great themes in it, really spooky stuff, and the presentation, the packaging was really fantastic.
Mm-hmm. Mine's Arrival.
Oh, cool.
That was something that I noticed while I was watching the movie. Like, wow, this score is amazing.
Yeah, I got to listen to that
again. Big thumbs up.
For me, and it's one of those that I wouldn't have known, like I didn't think it while I was watching it, but when I heard it separate, I fell in love with it immediately. Is actually the Scream TV series, score that was done by Jeremy Zuckerman. I mean, we did a whole bonus episode just on the Scream music, so that was my favorite soundtrack.
Clark, Neon Demon.
Yeah.
I listened to it yesterday.
That's like my second
book. And I love it so much more than watching the movie. I mean, the movie looks gorgeous, but I don't need the story.
Score.
Listening
movie,
to it. Cliff Martinez is awesome anyway, but this one goes super crazy. Mm. And if you just, even pulling it up on YouTube, I was just listening to it at work going, this is a fucking rad soundtrack.
It comes on my iPod unique. All the time. And
my favorite of the throwbacks was just getting the Beyond on vinyl. I got on vinyl listening to it, and I was like, oh, the Beyond is just awesome to hear. Mondo, good stuff.
In terms of film discovery, I do have to say I'm hashtag blessed over seeing Slaughter High. For the first time.
You were.
I don't think anyone's ever called watching Slaughter High blessed.
Hashtag blessed.
I felt blessed seeing it again.
On the big screen. That's a good one. Favorite.
I love that Rupert Pupkin when he does his discovery. It's my favorite thing every year because I think that's what we're always doing. We're hunting for movies. Mine by far, and even though it's one we talked about back in Killer PV, and then Becca liked it as well, was Soul Survivor, was a movie that when I finally saw it, I was like, oh, this is so cool. I'm seeing kind of the origins of it follows kind of the origins of
Final Destination.
And it was its own unique film that no one talks about and it's hard to find. And so it feels like a perfect little discovery.
Yeah. I had a couple. I definitely this year kind of rekindled my love with all, don't know what the subgenre is called, but it was part of the late 2000s. Throw a whole bunch of people in the room and make them figure out why they're there. And that is a subgenre. And so I discovered how much I love those movies, and I worked through 12 of them. And out of the bunch that I rewatched, Exam and Fermat's Room, I had never seen before. Exam was 2009 and Fermat's Room was 2007. And both of them are now some of my favorite films. And other fave film discovery, which Elric, I think, was with me at the screening, Eyes of Fire.
Oh, yeah. That was definitely on my list.
Yeah, that was CineFamily did a big movie. Witch fest back in May.
That would pair perfectly with The Witch. The best film to watch back to back with The Witch.
Exactly. And and that was definitely one of my discoveries where I'd seen the box cover sitting on VHS store shelves, but had never rented it. And then I was like, oh, this is epic. And I'd seen clips of it somewhere, but I don't know where. And then when I finally saw it in context, I mean, it's amazing.
Strange movie, yeah.
Clark, did you have one?
I did. I had one for sure. The other one I missed by a month. It was October of 2015, so never mind. Shall I say it anyway?
Yeah, go for it.
It was a Slumber Party Massacre. I saw that one.
Don't worry about release dates.
Well, I mean, I discovered it in 2015,
that's
not 2016.
Okay. We didn't talk to you last year.
That's true. So I'm going to go back for the last many years. That one, that I just fucking loved that movie. Yeah. And Halloween H2O.
Oh, yeah.
I had never seen it.
Wow.
And it's on HBO Go. And you know what was cool about it was I realized.
What? Please
that
tell
for,
us.
I'll tell you.
Brian Collins is listening.
Here's what I'll tell you. I realized that for me, the Halloween franchise is not about Michael Myers. It is about Laurie Strode. Mm-hmm. And I dug watching a movie about a grown-up Laurie Strode. And I thought that was really cool. So
hold on. I just need to ask somebody something. Hey, Ryan, is Halloween about Michael Myers or Laurie Strode? When we're, in terms of remake, just lay it down, whatever you're working on.
Let's just also go back to the tape, and I believe I said Halloween for me.
Oh.
It's about Laurie Strode, yeah, yeah. Not
like all
about
men,
Michael Myers.
I wasn't listening very well. And I apologize for all men. I always liked that show when I first saw it. It was fun.
My favorite discovery this year was Burial Ground, released
by
Severin. I've never seen it. I love movies like The Pieces, and stuff you watch and you're like, how does this exist and why does it work so well?
Yeah.
So that was that
one. It doesn't work well. It's just like there's a weird – I actually think that there's some sort of like pulse that comes out of the screen that makes all horror fans super gooey for the movie.
Right.
And
but you're still compelled to keep watching. There's a thin line between where you put something on and like, this is just bad and I can't, where you're like, what am I watching? No, I can't look away.
It's the most captivating train wreck ever.
Because all it is literally just people wandering around.
Yeah,
that's all the movie is.
Yeah,
they get to a house,
plot.
They wander around. They wander around some more.
And then
they start to make
come.
Out.
It's all about
they
Peter
start
Bark.
To have a little sexy time.
Yeah.
And then they get killed. But it's like there's something about it that's just like this throbbing pulse. It's like horror fans love me. And we're like, yes, this
Peter
is so
Bark,
great.
Peter Bark, baby, Peter Bark.
That was the first German steel book I ever bought Burial Ground because it hadn't come out here yet. And I was like, I must own this. I will pay $50 for
so much,
German steel book.
And we touched on some good performances, but if there's any that didn't make your top 10, just quit. Let's lay them down. Clark?
Mine's television, and it is the whole cast of Penny Dreadful.
Oh, I'm with you.
You
so
know,
hard.
God, that final season really crushed me. Yeah. It was sad because it felt very rushed, I think.
Well, especially the last episode.
Yeah.
Up until then, I didn't feel too bad.
I think fans could tell that, I think Showtime probably went to John Logan behind the scenes and said, look, wrap this up.
Yeah, yeah.
But we like you and we're going to keep working with you, but wrap this up.
Well, the Dracula storyline didn't get much time to breathe.
And, also, how do you introduce Dr. Jekyll and not have him turn into Mr. Hyde? How do you introduce a crazy cool vampire lady or vampire hunter and then just bye?
Yeah. Yeah.
So, I felt like Josh Hartnett never got his due. I thought he was amazing in every season. I think they're all great. So
it's one of the best casts.
They're just so good.
Yeah, I'm definitely with you. I probably am the only one saying this, and I know everyone's going to roll their eyes. I still think Richard Brake in Rob Zombie's 31 is one of the my favorite things seeing this. Not the movie. Don't get me wrong. I'm not a fan of this movie. But every time he was on screen, I just like looking at this guy going, man, I find you super interesting. I think your intensity is on a different level than everyone you're on screen with. And I just heard him in an interview talking about his love of 28 Days Later. He was on a podcast and where he talked about 28 Days and his friendship with Cillian Murphy. They're all buddies. Mm. And I just felt really endeared. He seemed like such a sweet guy. But on screen, he was pretty freaking scary and intense. So I'm going with Richard because it's always cool when you can notice someone in a movie that you didn't love. To me, that's always a sign of why. And the entire cast of Green Room, obviously, I already mentioned Jenna Malone and the little girl from Monster.
Oh, the little girl from Train to Busan. She was freaking amazing.
Yeah. No, you're totally right.
I want to throw a shout out to, I'm going to butcher her last name, Fiona O'Shaughnessy. She's Nina from Nina Forever.
This
is the film about the boyfriend who can't bring a girl home because his dead girlfriend keeps coming out of the mattress every time he has sex.
I forgot that was this year. That's a great movie.
It came
movie.
Out this year. So really fun. Really solid movie. It's a little long in the tooth. Like it feels like it's a 4-hour movie.
It's the best 25-minute movie ever, right? If that had been a short, you would have gone perfect.
Exactly.
Short.
But the girl who plays Nina, she really sells it because she feels so broken and dead and haunted.
And also kind of bored that she keeps coming
also
back.
Bored.
They're having sex and she's like, oh, fuck, I'm back again.
It's no, a weird I loved movie. It. I loved
That's
it.
Cool. Any other performances before?
I already mentioned mine.
Yeah, I had John Goodman from 10 Cloverfield and Brian Cox from Jane Doe.
Any other things?
Let's just shoot out television. I mean, it was a great year for television. I'm not going to spend too much time on all of them, but obviously I thought Ash vs. Evil Dead was a lot stronger and fun this season, minus the finale. people forget that Bates Motel was early this year, and season 4 was the best season they ever done because they dropped all of the side stories and characters and just focused on Norman and Mother. Channel Zero, Candle Cove, great.
Mm-hmm. That's my favorite show. I mean, Stranger Things and that are kind of tied.
Yeah, and yeah, I was going to say The Exorcist, obviously, we've all been a big fan of. Black Mirror coming back on Netflix. I think that was one of the strongest pieces of television we got.
Man, San Junipero. It wasn't a horror episode, but
that episode would be in my top 10 movies.
Well, San Junipero in a season full of so much
dark.
You know,
I cried.
It's one of the most beautiful things I've seen.
It's beautiful. And Elric already said it, but my favorite show of the year was Stranger Things.
Yeah.
And I think it was part of it was the fact that it just came out of nowhere for a lot of us. Mm-hmm. And kind
of probably my favorite articles of the year were all the people who were against
shitting
that. And every time I read one, I went, wow, you just don't love anything, dude.
Yeah.
And
it's so easy to like this thing.
Like,
I said this last episode, but it begs repeating just because I'm now four episodes in and really loving it. Check out 3%
on
Netflix.
Oh, yeah.
I have really enjoyed it so far.
I want to give a shout out to Outcast on Cinemax.
I really
like Outcast.
I only saw the pilot, so I'm curious to see how it went.
Yeah, I like it. And, you know, it's not your exorcism drama. You're not going to see head spinning. And it's a slow – it's not slow. I don't think it's slow, but it's a character piece. And everybody's great on it, and I think more people need to watch it.
Is it getting another season?
Yes.
Okay.
Yeah,
cool.
It was ordered for 2 seasons right off the bat.
Okay.
So I will say that the season 1 finale honestly felt more like a mid-season finale. But they knew they were coming back, and so they had things to work with. But the cast is fabulous, and it's exorcism and demons done in such a way that it's like this is not – we don't even know if they're demons, to be honest. We don't know what they are.
Yeah.
They leave a lot of the lore and the mystery kind of away.
Patrick Fugit is the lead.
Patrick Fugit.
And Adam Wingard directed the first one.
Correct, and Ren Schmidt is his sister, and
Walking Dead is the guy who did the comic.
Walking Dead, Robert Kirkman.
Skybound. Yeah, yeah. Skybound's.
It's great.
I gotta watch the rest of it because I did like the first episode.
You know, it's a great character piece. I like it a lot.
Well, excellent.
Well, guys,
that was one hell of a year.
This is the end
of
2006. It's 2016. 2006.
You're 10 years
behind.
2016. Can we go back and redo all that?
I know, right?
Oh,
well, I mean, this is a new show, and we're having fun creating this new show and changing it, and like it's going to keep evolving.
Yes.
And if you stick with us, we guarantee you're going to have a fun ride. And that's the fun thing about it. We love that there's a community of people having.
Yeah.
We love talking about horror, you know?
We love your feedback.
Yeah.
We love your feedback, even if it's negative, even if it's positive. Any feedback is welcome because it helps us, you know, strengthen the show.
Well,
because
we're starting to – we know what we want the show to be now, and so we're fine with that.
Right.
So we're going to just keep going until you all love it. And we want to thank Clark. I mean, seriously, you should come anytime.
Thank
this
you
was
so
a
much,
lot of
Clark.
Yeah.
It really was so fun, and it felt like we're 3 years younger today.
So much has happened in 3 years.
Yeah, right?
10 years. Ryan's skin looks so good tonight.
Yeah. I had a number 3. Yeah. And a number 6.
You did, and you got a t-shirt. In fact,
I'm
going to make you get in the shirt for the photo, just so you know.
Oh, yeah. That sounds awesome.
New Year's resolutions, guys. Horror New Year's resolutions. Rob?
I don't do that.
not try to be a completist anymore. I'm too old for that shit.
Becca?
Yeah, same thing. I've reached a point in my I made 2 big kind of declarations with my horror fandom this year. One, I purged a lot of my DVDs because as I said last show, I reached a point where I was like, do I really need to own Slivis? So in the
yes.
Yes, you do, because when I say, Becca, you got Slivis, you got to say yes.
I'm going to say, who the fuck would own Slivis? So, Rob probably has.
Probably.
So, but no, I reached a point where I had 6 bookcases full of DVDs. I now have 1.
Wow.
So that was kind of a big revelation. And then my other revelation was I can't be a completist. I have a lot going on in my life, a lot I want to be doing with my life. And so I can't watch every single horror film that comes out. So I have to pick and choose.
Like, I didn't even know there was a House 4 when that new set came out. Like, I remember liking House, and then I'm like, there's a House 4?
I love it.
Yeah. And I don't need to watch it ever.
Totally. Yeah.
Clark?
Mine is, you know, so one of my favorite comments that I get on my show Collider Nightmares is, you know, I was out of horror, but now you guys are so excited about it that it makes me want to get back into it. And, you know, or I never thought I was a horror fan, but maybe I am and I didn't know. And even if I'm not, I like listening to you guys talk. And I think that's really cool. So my goal for the new year is to just encourage that and hopefully bring that out a little bit more. Cause I think we've seen how popular genre is.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, it's everywhere year round. And so
it's not one thing, right?
It's
all
not.
The movies we talked about today are so
they
different.
Are.
Yeah. And I do have to say one of the biggest changes that I've made in kind of my horror fandom and understanding what horror is to fans this year is the acceptance of more of an online culture, things like creepypastas. Whereas before, to me, they were the other. I was like, yeah, there's some people online who tell stories. I don't know. They call them creepypastas. This year, because of the site and our coverage for it, I got way into them.
And I mean, a show, that's one of the best shows of the year that's based on
And so then I started researching. I started studying. And now I read them just because they're there and I want to read them. So kind of exploring this stuff that before I was like, oh, that's what like 16-year-olds do, right? And now I'm like, no, that fucking I said it again. That kicks ass, and I'm going to go read all of these things.
Yeah, nice. I think encouraging things that you love is good.
Yeah.
Well, thanks to you guys.
I was gonna say encouraging positive conversation as well.
Yeah.
Yeah. Which we're gonna continue doing on our now group.
Yes.
Which
yes.
is amazing. Yes. I wanted to do a shout out to our recording engineer Ernie. Yep. Her daughter.
Thank you, Ernie.
Been with us for the second half of the year and the patience of a saint.
And changed the course of where we were because it was it's hard to not have somebody in that support role and doing the thankless job, and it made this work a lot easier.
Yes, if it wasn't for him, we wouldn't be as strong a unit as we are now.
I'd call him the wind beneath our wings.
I would easily call him that.
So thank you so much, Ernie, for being a part of the show, and again, thanks to all you guys for listening, and we'll see you in 2017.
Yeah.
Stay safe out there.